Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to Action Radio. This is Greg Penglis coming to you from the historic district of downtown Milton on the banks of the beautiful Blackwater River. And now let's get into Action Radio. Well, it's Kickback Tuesday for me. We've got a lot of regular reporters today, and that's what makes Tuesday so much fun. We've got Chris Jean's going to start us off in just a little bit here with, are you kidding me? One of my favorite segments of the week. But no, it's crazy. It's that we've got, actually Shelby's going to join us at 7 o'clock, so an hour from now, with our cruise and travel report. We've got Josie Cossie with the Latino report, 7:30. We've got Paulette Martin with the Naughty Food report. That'll be at 8 o'clock. And then Chancey Terry with Wine, Weed, and Wellness, and that's at 8:30. So once we get into the second hour, it's just reports. And it's really, like I say, it's fun for me. I just kind of kick back, especially compared to what happened yesterday. We had, unfortunately, Dr. Pry couldn't make it to the show yesterday. So Gene and I had 3 hours. It actually turned out to be, I think, one of our best shows ever, because everything that you could want in an action radio show is there in that show from yesterday. And so that's the one I sent off to CPAC, as I'm trying to get the opportunity to teach workshops there in citizen legislation, which, of course, would be groundbreaking for them, groundbreaking for us, too. But we teach workshops on legislation every day, and so there's always something going on here as far as that goes. But that's what I'm going for right now. Of course, we have our new website, so don't forget to check out writeyourlaws.com. That's writeyourlaws.com. We have a fabulous new website. Absolutely fabulous. Okay, my turn to kind of sit back a little bit and let Gene take it away. Oops, the wrong one. where did I put my, I can't believe I hit the wrong button. You always hear the guys hitting the wrong button. You know, is it Yeltsin to talk shows? Well, I actually do. Anyway, I'll start again. When all is falling apart around you, when people are looking to you for answers you don't have, when you need a calm, reassuring voice to settle your fragile nerves, well, you've come to the right place. The always serene and tranquil, reasoned and measured, stable and sedate Gene Vernig, producer of the Action Radio Citizen Legislature, takes a few minutes each week at this time to reflect on her favorite phrase, "Are you kidding me?" And now, Gene Vernig.
Yeah, I actually played life coach theme for a bit there. So if you want to ever give a life coach report again, feel free. I still keep the theme. So, you know, we have lots of old buttons here. Like, I don't remember what I'm doing. Well, as usual, I'm disorganized. You know, it's like I think I have all the time in the world prepping for the show. And then I realize there's like 5 minutes left. It's like, oh, my God, I have to do this. You know, it's one of those crazy things. You have lots of time until you have no time. And then it just, you know, it's crazy. Anyway, good morning, Gene.
Oh, good morning. Good morning. Yeah, it is interesting when you look and you say, oh, I got this many hours, this many minutes, whatever. Yeah, mm-hmm. And how fast when it gets towards the end, it seems to
go
so much faster, but yet it doesn't because it's all the same time. But
oh, I know. Yeah, yeah, I call it time compression. It's like you think it's moving faster. It's really not, but you just think it is. And so, yeah, the shortest time in the world of the 5 minutes before the show, it's like, oh, no. And especially if you get an idea and like, well, I have to look this up. Well, no, I don't have time. I'll look it up tomorrow. Okay, fine. After the show, maybe, if I remember it. Better write it down. Whoop, show starting.
Yeah.
That's kind of how it goes at my end. But anyway, yeah, yeah. So what's on your mind today? What have you got for us?
I just got a question. I want your opinion, and if people want to call in, I'd be curious to their opinion as well. But Dennis Nunes resigning to be Trump's head person for his new media company. And what do you think of that?
Well, first of all, I'm glad you mentioned that because I was trying to think. There was one more story I've been trying to think of that I remember from One American News, and so I'm just putting it right down right now. Devin Nunes, yeah. I think it's Devin. N-E-Z, there we go. I don't know if that's such a good idea. I think what happens is people, they get in Congress and they have all this power and influence, but they don't realize how much they have because especially if they're Republicans, the Democrats are always trouncing them, always winning in the media because the Republicans are geldings. And for the most part, they don't fight back. You know, the idea of Kevin McCarthy fighting back against Ilhan Omar, you know, who I said, we talked about, Lauren Boebert said, and rightly so, you know, married her brother, has another fake marriage, fraudulently got her immigration stuff in, shouldn't even be here, and certainly shouldn't be in Congress, is probably working for the Somali government, and should be stripped of her citizenship and deported. You know, I actually said more than Lauren Boebert just said, you know, and yet she has to apologize. And you know, Kevin McCarthy, the weak, you know, wimpy little person that he is, says, well, you know, what about Ilhan Omar saying, you know, I'm just supporting Israel for the Benjamins? Well, that's pretty gutless and gelding of you. We should make that a verb. That's very gelding of you there, Kevin McCarthy. What he should have said was, well, has Ilhan Omar renounced Sharia law? That's what you need to ask. You know, let's do
right.
that. Let's get out there and do that one. It suddenly occurred to me this morning. I mean, there was, or disavowed Sharia law. I mean, you know, everybody was going after Trump. Have you disavowed white supremacy? Well, of course. And why would you even ask me that question? Was what he should have said. Why are you asking me that question? What's your political objective here? So Republicans don't know how to fight that. When it comes to Devin Nunes, I think he's going to find, as Trey Gowdy found, as Jacob Chaffetz found, and as Matt Gaetz is about to find out, that being in the media is fun, but it's nowhere near as powerful as being in Congress. And I wonder if somehow they don't regret their decisions, because Jacob Chaffetz was very good in Congress. He was very good in committee hearing. He asked lots of really tough questions. Now, he can ask those same questions on the media, but no one's answering them back. And so it doesn't really have an effect. I mean, it's nice to report it. We're listening, you know, and things like that. That's why with Action Radio, I never wanted to be part of a media that just talked to two people and nothing happened. I mean, that to me is a waste of media. And so the difference is, so we're kind of like the bridge. So I think Devin, I wish him well. I want to get in touch with Devin Nunes. I'm hoping he'll be at CPAC, because I know we're going to be there. You know, the only question with us, with Action Radio at CPAC, is how we're going to be there. I'm pretty sure we can broadcast from Media Row and do my show, you know, directly from there. I don't know anything about the workshops. I'm hoping, you know, like I say, you know, to do that. But, you know, there's no way to know for sure yet. But if I can contact Devin Nunes, the first thing I want to do is tell him about Action Radio at CPAC and see, A, if I can get him on the show, and B, if he's working for Trump's media, you know, if Trump media carried Action Radio, we'd have a pretty big audience overnight. I mean, like millions, literally millions of people would all of a sudden get an idea that they can write their own laws. They can write the laws they consent to be governed by. They can send them to any branch of government and say, here, this is what you should be passing, you morons. You know, so I hope he finds that it's worth it to leave Congress. But considering he's the head of a committee, and that the Republicans are likely to be the majority in the next Congress, I don't think they'll do anything with it because they're geldings. But at least as head of a committee, he can subpoena, he can do all kinds of things. And I think he's going to find that although this Congress is frustrating, he's probably better off staying than running Trump's media campaign, because corporations, you know, come and go, and, you know, he might have a bunch of CEOs, you know, a board of directors that doesn't let him do what they want, and who knows what's going to happen. Corporations are crazy. And Trump might, you know, move on and leave it and let someone else take over. I mean, there's too many uncertainties in a corporation. So for him to give up his position as head of, I think, the intelligence and judiciary, I'm not sure which committees, but he's on two very powerful committees. I think it's a bad move, personally. And I think it's short-sighted. I think he's going to miss the power and influence he would have in Congress, especially if there was a GOP majority. It's kind of a long answer, but you asked a big question.
Right. No, that's interesting, because, yeah, with Trey Gowdy, I don't even know why he actually did resign, because I would have thought, just based on how he was doing, people liked him.
Mm-hmm.
And it is interesting, yeah. But I was listening, God, this has been a while ago, and about people talking mm-hmm. about him, and they didn't like him either. They just thought he was a lot of fluff. You know, I think a lot of them really
are. Well, he's
really
a good prosecutor. I mean, he had a really good track record as a prosecutor.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think he's effective in Congress. I think he, you know, but the things that make you effective in Congress don't make you good in the media. Now, some people can make the transition.
Right.
And like I say, Matt Gaetz is about to, we'll see what happens in this election, but, you know, my own congressman here, Matt Gaetz, who hasn't talked to us, you know, since I was, you know, asked to leave WBY, hasn't, you know, he's really kind of abandoned the district in many respects and has gone the media route. And that's okay for,
right.
for, you know, your ego, but it's not okay for your career necessarily or for the influence you have. And does he, I think he has less influence in Congress now, being the media. He's known by more people, but he has less influence.
Right. Because, and I think it tells you a lot about that person's character. You know, basically.
Well, Washington's really seductive.
In.
Yeah. Washington's really
voted
seductive.
In for, and let's, yeah. Yeah, let the power, the mm-hmm. image get to the head, and that's where it's sad, because then you forget, you know, the roots, the people, why you're mm-hmm. there.
Yep.
Yeah.
Well, that's, I think Washington does that to people. In the limited time I was there, you know, you can see the praise and the, you know, the patting on the back of each other, and especially in the Senate.
Yeah.
You know, talk about the reinforcement of each other's egos. Well, the distinguished right. senator from so-and-so, you know, of course, you know, and even if they fight on the floor, they all go to dinner that night. They're all buds. They're all in the same club. You know, so it's fascinating watching people who will disagree in public and, you know, find them in the Georgetown restaurants, you know, on a Friday night, hanging out, having fun, you know, drinking too much, and then doing what, you know, senators and Congress folks do. It's pretty amazing. But, yeah, that's
right.
what I found. Yeah. Then, of course, you know, the family back home. Well, you know how it goes. It's Washington. But it's a crazy place. It's a real den of iniquity. But, yeah, it's, I think, and I don't know, I've never seen anybody go back from media to Congress that I can think of. But it would be an interesting...
I can't think of anybody. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, it's, once you leave, you know, it's... in other words, you don't realize what you've lost until it's gone kind of thing. I don't think...
Right.
I think that, yeah, I think they don't realize what they give up when they leave Congress in order to, you know, become a media star. Now, a lot of media stars go into Congress. It's kind of interesting. A lot of... Larry Elder, for example, has been a talk show host in L.A. For, I guess, you know, 20 or 30 years. I mean, he's been a long time, you know, person. He ran for governor. And so there's a lot of times you find media people will make the jump to politics, but they usually don't go back again. Ronald Reagan's probably the most famous example. Now that I think about it, someone who was an actor, who made speeches for General Electric, was a media person, mm-hmm. you know, and then became governor of California and became president. But you didn't see him go back into acting, you know, after, well, of course, he was old. But it's interesting. But yeah, but you see, this usually it's the way to go. Showbiz folks, you know, entertainment and politics is a very fine line. It's like genius and insanity. It's one of those lines, you know, the difference between politics and acting. In fact, I think there's a whole lot of crossover. So it seems fairly natural for folks to do that because they're used to being in the public eye, you know, they're public figures. But there's a difference between voting for a bill. See, I don't want to do it. I don't ever want to run for office because this is going to sound really arrogant, but I think, you know, we'll have more power and influence, certainly influence, as Action Radio, writing the bills that everybody can submit, you know, and everybody else providing their ideas for us, writing bills that they want to submit, you know, to Congress, doing the things that I could never do as a member of Congress because they have to raise too much money. I'd have to, you know, shake the hands of people you know, I can't stand. You know,
right.
I'd have to pretend
well,
to like people I have a great distaste for, and I can't do that. It's just a principle thing. Yeah,
well, I think with Action Radio, though, we're mm-hmm. trying to empower people.
Yes.
When you're in office, you don't empower people. You know, they tend to just want to empower themselves.
That's another good reason.
Get to the next best shiny object, and it could be mm-hmm. because they want to be on, you know, be a Matt mm-hmm. Gaetz, where they're on so many different programs and stuff like that. And it's like, but that doesn't mean you're a better politician. It just means, can mean different things. Just how well you kiss up, how well you do this or that or whatever, just to get your name out there.
Well, you can't believe your handlers. You know, the handlers are some of the most evil people in Washington. One of the biggest ones used to be Paul Manafort. You know, I know he was in jail, and I think he was unjustly, you know, made a political prisoner of the Obama-Biden folks. But, you know, in reality, he was a terrible campaign strategist, and the Republicans were told to go to him. He'll help you out. And he was like, you know, don't campaign too hard. Don't say anything. You know, don't be too hard on Obama. You look like a racist. He was telling this was the advice to McCain and Romney. Of course, they lost. You know, and they lost because they didn't campaign. So of course, you know, Obama feeling, you know, very black and very empowered to say anything he wants because he's black and empowered, you know, totally criticized the old white guys, and he could do that with impunity. And so Manafort was a terrible campaign consultant, and a lot of campaign handlers are like that. They you know, they're in it for the money. They'll take money from politicians saying, I'm the best. I'm the campaign consultant to go to. And you look at the track record, and they suck. You know, they're terrible.
Right.
They give terrible advice. And Trump, of course, didn't listen to any of them. That's how he got elected. So this is the handlers and the handlers that the parties tell them to take because it's very incestuous. You know, it's a very, you know, very business kind of thing. And, you know, do the right thing and we'll keep you in power. And here's your campaign consultant. And you want to listen to what they say and totally forget your principles and do what we say. And you'll have a nice long career and, you know, you'll buy rich. Oh, okay. Well, and a lot of them make that bargain. I can't do that. So I'm going to try.
That's good. I'm glad.
No, thank you. Pause there. Give you a chance to think. I think, you know, this is something I'm learning in radio, too, that it's okay to have a little pause to think for a few seconds. I'm so used to filling the airspace that I'm trying to this is my personal improvement, trying to sort of leave a little bit of space to be able to go, huh, well, that's interesting. And then we can kind of move on from there. But yeah, I think the Gates has been handled. I think he's gotten terrible advice. I think he has abandoned the district at his own peril. I think that the consultants who advised him wanted to be in the limelight for them to advance their careers. I don't think they gave a damn about Gates. And I think he's suffering because of it. And I think, this is going to sound really arrogant again. Best thing he could do is start calling our show again, because we worked together extremely well his first year in office and had a ton of good ideas that were, like the citizenship question on the census and some of the other things that we talked about, budget items. Our analysis and investigations of how the Mueller Commission was the insurance policy 6 months before anybody else thought of it. So we were pretty far ahead here. And, when he was talking to us, together we were able to analyze the news, and we kept months ahead of anybody else in media. So he's smart enough to know how media works. But I think, again, like a lot of people, like Trey Gowdy, like Jacob Chavis, they ran into the limelight and forgot the true source of their power, which was being in Congress.
Yeah,
good point.
True.
Yeah.
They saw the light. It was the wrong light.
Wrong light.
It was the
limelight.
Light.
Yeah, it was the limelight, not the knowledge light. Yeah.
So yeah,
they
exactly.
The wrong light. They followed the wrong light. That's a great analogy, Gene. Followed the wrong light. Yeah, I like that. Okay. See things we come up with on the show? Brilliant by accident.
Mostly. Yeah. That's true. The thing is, I was listening to Scott McKay. I don't know if you've ever listened to him.
Oh, he's
and
the guy
on
the other station?
That's where I listen to most of my stuff.
He's the guy on the other Pensacola, other Pensacola station. I'm thinking of Andrew McKay. Who's Scott? Oh no, Scott McKay. Sorry, Scott McKay. Totally different person. Scott McKay is Red State Radio.
I'm not sure what he is, but he's not. I just listened to him on Facebook, and I think it's is it America? American Media Periscope? No, that's not it. I forget what it is. I'll find out.
When you find out, you can let him know about us, too. Maybe we can have him on, or we'll be on their show. Let's tell him about citizen legislation, the future.
I listen to him every once in a while, but the one I was listening to earlier, he's talking about how many times on Facebook he's been kicked off and having to come back on different platforms and stuff like that. But the reason I bring him up today is because he talked a lot about COVID, and it's everything we've been saying, but it is so frustrating because he was talking about, and I wrote a few things down, I couldn't even keep up, and then I tried to rewind, and sometimes I never got back to what I wanted to listen to, and on my phone it was cutting out, and sometimes it cuts out, like last week one day when you were talking on my computer, but I think that was my computer, but on Facebook,
so
when it cuts
episode,
out,
usually
it's messing with things. And the reason I say that is because I didn't look for comments today, but sometimes when I'm listening to certain people I listen to, and people will be typing in, you're cutting out. And then later I listen to a different, like on Rumble or something, and it's as clear as day. And so it's really frustrating that Facebook can do stuff like that. So I can't wait for Trump's media stuff to come out and see what it all involves. And if it has also a social media platform to it, that would be lovely.
Yeah, the first thing to do if you get a chance is contact them, tell them about us. And let's see what's going on. I'm going to work on CPAC, but if you want to contact Trump or Devin Nunes, contact them immediately and say, hey, do you really want to be the cutting edge of freedom? Do you really want to know, you want to see the future? Well, it's already here, dudes, Trump dude and Devin dude. We're already doing it. We're already there. And so we've got the bills. We've had an agenda since 2018. The 2018 midterms, we already had a citizen agenda that would have blown anything the Geldings came up with away. And I sort of have to, hope that the Geldings actually get their act together, because I know the Marxists aren't. The Marxists are here to destroy the country, and the Geldings seem to be here to let them, or at least to be, to take whatever reward they can as the country's sinking. It's like someone who's, reading the food table on the Titanic. Well, it's free.
Yeah.
Yeah, the ship's going down. Yeah, it doesn't matter. It's free. Okay.
Yeah.
You a little misplaced priorities there if you think about it, but yeah. Go for it. I mean, I can try too, but definitely if you feel inspired, contact Trump. you know, contact the new media. Now, what do you think it's going to be, though? Do you think it's going to be like a One American News? Do you think it's going to be an actual, you know, with reporters? Do you see Kayleigh McEnany, who's actually coming to Pensacola this Sunday? Do you see some of the old Trump media folks, Sean Spicer maybe, you know, reporting on Trump News?
You know, that would be pretty neat because some of those guys are very excellent communicators.
Yeah.
I mean, oh my gosh, just they're so fun to listen to. And to be honest, if someone, when they talk, if they are boring for me to listen to, meaning they're monotone or they're just filled with garbage, I don't focus. I can't listen, even if it's like the best talk, whatever, ever. But like Jen Psaki, every time she comes on, it's like, are you, oh my God. And her,
you can say, are you kidding me?
Oh yeah. It's like, oh, but I don't want to say for her, it's the black lady that's going to take her place. I don't even know what her name is. She is even harder to listen to.
Oh,
it's
no.
Like, oh, my God.
Well, liberals are...
And it's sad because really you should want to listen to what they're saying just for the information they're saying, and then you make your own decision. But, oh, my God. They talk...
Well, see, part of the problem with Jen Psaki is she's arrogant. She believes her own propaganda. You know, she'll out there, she'll spout things like, you know, when who's the guy from Fox News, the tall guy? His father does the morning news. I forgot his name. Anyway, big tall
Peter
reporter.
Peter
Ducey? Ducey, there we go. I was thinking like Dewey. That's not quite right. Peter Ducey. So Ducey asked Psaki, you know, what's going on with the border? It says, you know, you're requiring all these vaccination mandates of American citizens. You're letting, you know, 2 million people cross the border this year. What's going on with that? He said, well, that's a different issue. No, it's not. You know, I mean, but the arrogance, and then she gets that really condescending look on her face, like, how dare you question me? Who do you think you are, peon, peasants, you know, media person who we deem to let, you know, sit here in this privileged chair? I mean, that's her attitude. So I can't imagine the next person would be, you know, especially, I can't wait to see the next, you know, black liberal affirmative action, you know, black supremacist, you know, spokesperson for the Brandon insurrection. That would be fascinating. Take arrogance to a new level.
I'm surprised they let Peter Ducey even attempt to step foot in there anymore, because he's put out some pretty darn good questions, I have to say. It's like,
yeah. But they haven't answered him. Yeah, they do that for ratings.
For them to even allow him to say it.
Well, I mean, the White House press corps is supposedly an independent journalist organization that can ask what they want. There was a clip, there was a famous clip done, I think, about 20 years ago, where there was somebody questioning something about Nancy Pelosi, and she wasn't speaker then, and this was, you know, before she started that nonsense. But I forgot who the journalist was, but he's actually a real journalist, and he kept hammering. He said, no, that's not right. You said this and this. Now, wait a minute. You just said this, and that can't be. You know, you're making this stuff up. What's going on? And he was really going after her, and that's what journalists are supposed to do. You know, the lapdogs that are in the media and the White House press corps now, they're part of the club. They are there to support the administration rather than to analyze and report on it. And that's the biggest problem. When journalists became, you know, part of the narrative, you know, when they became part of the administration, basically, when they became part of the deep state, you know, Peter Ducey is the only person who's asking somewhat decent questions. You know, there is, you know, and even then they're just not answering him. They don't care. It doesn't matter. Because the rest of the media is there to support him. No one else is going to report him except Fox News and One American News. Maybe Newsmax, too. I don't watch that much. But, yeah. I'll tell you who I would like to get on the show is Eric Bolling. Is on Newsmax at 3 o'clock. And he's an interesting guy. He got he had the usual Democrat, you know, sex stuff. I don't know if it's real or not. If it's real, then he shouldn't be on the air. But if it's, you know, made up like they usually do to try and get rid of conservatives they don't want, like Bill O'Reilly and some of the other people, it's always a sex scandal. Because it works, you know. And so, but he'd be a really interesting person to have on the show. I think he lost one of his kids committed suicide. So he'd be a fascinating person to have on. Anyway, media. Yeah, we definitely need to contact some of these folks. But yeah, Trump, if he's doing social media and media, that would be interesting. I want to see how big it gets, because you know he's going to get trounced by all the liberal media, which might actually get him more ratings.
But you know that doesn't matter, because there's a lot of people. I mean, even look at Fox, when Fox was in its heyday, they always had way more viewers than any of the other cable companies did.
Yeah,
so there,
true.
There
yeah.
is something out there, and does have a following. Not Fox. Trump does have a following. I mean, he really does. As far as people respecting him, people wanting to hear from him, Yeah, and not that everybody, no, but I think start something like that. That would be really interesting because, oh my God, I could just about imagine some of the other news programs. They won't be covering the news anymore. All they'd
be
covering is what's going on Trump station, you know, and saying why it's wrong. So that would be a very interesting thing.
Well, what we need is the TRN, the Trump Radio Network, and have Action Radio be completely independent, you know, place like we are now, and just have them carry our show. If the Trump Radio Network carried our show, we'd be in amazing shape. And then we could, when we talked about legislation, and then there'd be other news networks would be reacting to the legislation that regular folks are proposing. And that goes to our total change in the relationship of the citizen to the government, which is what we're proposing, which is the reversal of the direction that laws flow, you know, from special interest to Congress, to the president, to the people. What we're going to do is reverse that, and we're going to go from the people to the Congress, to the president, to the special interests. You know, I mean, so
right.
that's and that could be, I think it's going to be historic. Well, it just depends what happens to CPAC. This is why CPAC is so critical, where it's, you know, at least it's, you know, close enough I could just, you know, hop in my car and dash across to Orlando. And it's going to be, I think, a very interesting time. So let's see what they say. See what they let me do. I'm going to be there anyway. You know, and
right.
I had an amazing time last time. I met Gordon Chang, for example, and Gordon spent an hour on our show. And that hour, talking about North Korea, we were so far ahead of everybody else. And the fact that he gave us an hour, this is before he became he was big then, but he's really big now. In fact, I've got an article by him. But the ability to talk to some of these people, Grover Norquist, I met, he was on the show. Sebastian Gorka, I didn't talk to long enough. And, of course, he's got his own show now. So, you know, that's a different story. Anyway, I've got some things I want to talk about between now and 7. So I'll make sure we get your issues covered.
Yeah,
did you have more stuff?
Yeah, I just want to talk about the stuff that was Scott said about just quickly, because
to let
people know the evilness of what's going out there. And I still don't understand how Dr. Fauci can even have a platform to speak. But basically, when people go into the hospital government, if the hospitals follow the protocols, they get an added bonus if a person is diagnosed with COVID. They get an added bonus if a person's admitted with COVID. They get 20% bonus from Medicare if the hospital uses remdesivir. So that means Medicare should not be stipulating what treatments are used. Medicare are not a physician. And so right there, it's BS. This is where it gets scary. There's no reason for that. They should not be allowed. And then,
well, that's why hundreds of thousands of people are dead. You know, their benefits are killing people. You know, in fact, Josie has a friend of hers that personally is in the hospital right now. You know, and she'll talk about that a little bit. But, yeah, this is real. I know people have been in the hospital, got remdesivir, and I just pray that they don't have a lifelong injury from it.
Right. And then there's a cause of death. If you get a cause of death letter and it says COVID, you get more money. And then this is what I didn't understand either. But even the coroner, if they put that the person died of remdesivir, they get extra payments. So it's
died
of
remdesivir or died of COVID?
COVID, sorry. Yeah,
okay.
Not remdesivir. COVID. If they died of COVID, they get a bonus. They shouldn't get a bonus just because they say someone died of COVID. That is not right. And then
no, but that's part of the marketing campaign.
That's
part of the marketing to scare people. The more people that die of COVID, the more vaccines they think they can push, even though they're not vaccines, and they're not dying of COVID. They're dying of remdesivir and malpractice. That's what they're dying of.
Yeah, and the way he made it sound was hospitals are getting $100,000 per patient per hospitalization if they're diagnosed with COVID. And
did you
give
me a source? Did you get a source on that? I want to document this, and I want to have a recording.
No, he doesn't give sources. And then 71% of adverse effects, or 71% of the people that are treated with remdesivir have negative side effects.
How about what percent? 70 what?
About 71%.
Okay, that makes sense.
He said over 800,000 deaths in the U.S. caused by restricting fluids, restricting nutrition, restricting antibiotics, restricting therapeutics, including anticoagulations. So what this means is that how many people died of COVID, and then you look at how many people were in the hospital treated And I mean, how many do you hear of that go to the hospital, they're restricted of fluids, they're put on remdesivir, and it's like their kidneys shut down and their lungs shut down. Well, not their lungs are shut down. They start filling up, and it's like they choke. It's like they choke to death, basically, or just suffocate. Not choke to death, but suffocate. I mean, how sad is that?
Oh, drowning.
Dr. Fauci, what he's
fluid.
Pushing. Yeah. There's no reason for this stuff, people. Mm-hmm. I mean, there really isn't. I mean, it's incomprehensible for me to think that this is going on in this country.
Well, listen, as someone who almost died of my chest filling up with fluid, not because of my heart surgery, but because of, I think, the blood thinners, because of the drugs that I was given, I am very close to this. And so, you know, when I hear stories about remdesivir, when I hear stories about ventilators, I'm horrified. If they put me on a ventilator, I'd be dead. You know, what they did was they drained the fluid out. They drained out 4.5 liters of fluid, of blood and fluid out of my chest because some drug put it there. And, of course, they wanted to put me on blood thinners afterwards. I said, no effing way are you getting near me with any blood thinners for the rest of my life. Don't even think about it. And I've been fine ever since. Okay. So I'm pretty convinced it was the blood thinners. In fact, I dumped most of the medicines they gave me, the painkillers, you know, the extra stuff. And I said, look, my body's doing just fine. Thank you very much. And you know, in fact, most of the stuff they gave me, you know, increased weight gain. So I think a lot of the reason I was carrying a lot of extra weight after surgery for, you know, a couple of years was all those extra medicines. As soon
right.
as I got
well,
rid of medicines, I started losing weight. It was amazing how
right.
that works.
And
yeah.
heart surgery yeah. is a lot different than COVID. Totally
oh, completely different.
You can't
but
compare
the point
the
is,
two.
No, but, the,
but
it's the filling
it's
of your lungs
very
with fluid.
Sad.
Yeah, I know
yeah,
what that feels
exactly.
like.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's very sad that they're doing that to these people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, these
well,
Americans,
and I was,
true Americans, that go into the hospital – you know, thinking that someone else is looking out for their well-being. No, they're not. So people yeah. out there.
Well, at
be
least
very
when
cautious.
When I had it, you know, I was conscious enough. They didn't put me out. They didn't put me under some drug sedation thing like that and then put me on a ventilator. You know, I was conscious. And I said, what are the treatment options here? Well, we'd like to drain the fluid out. I said, good, do it. Let's go. You know, the word ventilator wasn't even mentioned, thank God. But I
well, no, but
it
they
anyway.
Don't put someone on a ventilator in your case like that.
Right.
That's not a protocol at all.
Okay, that makes sense. Because I was breathing. I just wasn't breathing well because I only had like a third of one lung was actually operating. The rest of my chest was full of fluid.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So been there. Been
yeah,
there, almost done that. Yeah. So I, you know, that's, I'd say the worst feeling in the world is trying to breathe in and there's nothing there. There's no space for the air. There is,
right.
I can't,
well,
I can't, you know, yeah.
And then not having people, family members there to be with you because of COVID, you can't be in to visit them. And
yeah.
that's a travesty in itself. It's like,
yeah.
good God, it just doesn't make any sense. It was a, I almost want to say a well-orchestrated plan.
Well, it's a marketing campaign. It's all about selling the product. The product is, you know, mRNA GMO shots. That's the product.
And
well, we need to find those bonuses. We need to find, I want to get something written as to why they're and how they're doing this because it's critical. Maybe I can get some of the medical folks I know. Maybe Josie can get some medical folks she knows. You know, let's get us an actual sheet from the Center for, you know, Medicaid, Medicare, you know, systems funding, and let's see how much they're dishing out. But if it's $100,000 a patient, that's a lot of money. You know, in other words,
yeah.
you're more valuable dead to the hospitals than alive is what it really comes down to.
Well, the thing is, that's not even it, just to get that much extra for putting someone on remdesivir. I mean, how doesn't affect them any. It's just a treatment protocol, big deal. They do it all the time. You know,
yeah.
use this, use that, whatever. But my thinking is if someone comes in there and there's so many people now or places where people are taking hospitals to court because they're not allowing their loved one to have the therapeutics, that how in good conscience can you do this? Basically, they are murdering people. I mean, because of what they're doing, how they're treating them. You can't tell me that they don't know that it's not working. Hello? When you have other people that have such great success stories for treating them with the ivermectin and the other therapeutics versus putting someone on remdesivir and a ventilator.
Yeah. Yeah. No, you're absolutely right. I want to leave this for a bit because I want to we only have about 27 minutes before we it depends when Shelby calls in. She usually calls in a bit after 7. But this is the totally switch gears here. This is the 80th anniversary of the attack on Pearl Harbor. And, of course, it was all over the news, right? I mean, everybody heard about it. Yeah. Well, of course, I only watch One American News. Well, sometimes Fox. But for the most part, One American News covered it pretty well. Tulsi Gabbard had had a post, and I posted that on my page. But you can go to her page, and she's there with the some of the Pearl Harbor survivors. And so it's a fascinating thing that this is really kind of disappeared from the news. Now, and I remember being in high school. We had my band director in high school served in World War II. So this is back in the late 70s. I'm in high school, and he was a radio operator in the Pacific. So every Pearl Harbor Day, you know, he'd write Pearl Harbor Day, you know, on the announcements for the you know, for band that day. And so he was director of the music department. So, you know, he was a jazz musician too. So he came back and taught music, you know, my high school. But it was fascinating that that generation, the World War II generation, there's only about, I think, 200,000 left of the 16 million people that served in World War II. And so it's, you know, we're losing those folks. But it's interesting to find out what's happening now. And it's actually to our advantage with what's happening with Japan. Japan is now arming, you know, against China. And they're arming against China because we're not doing anything. And this actually, I think, is a good thing. In fact, I think Japan should get nuclear weapons. Let's be really controversial here. I think that South Korea needs them, as does Australia. India already has them. So it's interesting that some of our strongest allies don't have nuclear weapons, and some of our worst enemies do. It's kind of an interesting thing going on here. But Pianki, one of our regular callers, posts this in our Action Radio group, which is our public Facebook page for anyone that wants to join in and post news stories, you know, of interest. A lot of times I take stories from that and use them on the show, but this is from the AP of all places. Mari Yamaguchi, Associated Press, reported AP, Japan's military among world's strongest looks to build. Okay, this is from Inewa, Japan. Dozens of tanks and soldiers fired explosives and machine guns in drills Monday on Japan's northern island of Hokkaido, a main stronghold for a nation that is perhaps the world's least known military powerhouse. Yeah, apparently they're number five. Japan's number five in the world right now, and they call it the defensive forces. So, I'm going to bring Gene back in a little bit, but knowing, you know, what, however much you know about World War II, and I kind of studied it a lot, so I'm pretty well versed in, you know, some of the battles and things like that. But I always look for the strategy. I look for how we got into it. I look for the things not reported, like the fact that I think it was either General or Colonel Billy Mitchell reported back in the 20s, I think like 25, that Japan was going to attack Hawaii because they had to stop our Navy, to let their Navy do what their Navy wanted to do to capture the South Pacific, mostly for oil and raw materials and metals and things like that to fuel their growing industrial base. That's really what it was about. I mean, we had an oil embargo on Japan. That's one of the reasons they attacked us. Not justifying, I'm just saying, you know, this was a war for resources and power and territory. You know, very much a classical war, whereas the war in Europe was much more an ideological, political, you know, kind of thing, you know, the whole Nazi Aryan, you know, thing that led to the Holocaust. So there were two very different wars, I think. Japan was under an emperor, and Germany was under a dictator. You know, same totalitarian base, but different ways, I think, of doing what they were doing. Anyway, so Japan attacks Pearl Harbor to try and stop our Navy so that we don't go to war with Japan. That was the idea. And it's interesting that these many years later, first of all, after World War II, nobody wanted Japan to have any arms at all. In fact, MacArthur basically wrote their constitution. And so they have a very Western, you know, I hate to say democracy, but more of a pro-republic constitution. But they built up a defense force because they had to against, you know, some of the other forces around, like China and North Korea, which are, you know, not that far, just across the Sea of Japan from Japan. And so now, with a weakened U.S. under Brandon, with, you know, the idea that we're going to, you know, go to have a nuclear war with China over Japan, I think is long since past that the Japan is under our protection. They're not under that illusion. We're not under that illusion. We're trying to maintain that illusion, but it doesn't exist. They know it. Anybody who looks at it knows it. This is why Australia is getting nuclear submarines. You know, the Quad countries that when Claire Lopez was here, she would talk about the Quad, India, Australia, Japan, and South Korea. Those are the four countries, you know, around the South China Sea, you know, trying to stop China from taking them over, you know, the free republics. And so those nations are building up because they have to, because the U.S. used to be the dominant military power and is not. So it's interesting that I think a lot of people have no problem with the fact that Japan's building up their forces, because they know and we know that we can't protect them anymore. And yet, you know, there's still enough people around who remember Pearl Harbor. And as we remember the attack on Pearl Harbor, you know, we look at our ally now, Japan. It's kind of interesting because we rebuilt Japan after World War II. You know, as we rebuilt Germany, and we didn't rebuild Russia, which is kind of interesting, because they were in opposition to us being communist. That's a whole other story too, is why the Marshall Plan didn't extend to Russia. but it didn't. And Russians remember that too. Anyway, I digress. So Japan, you know, you look through, remember when I was a kid watching cartoons, you know, the joke was made in Japan. And, you know, I think some of the coyote things to get the Roadrunner were made in Japan. Of course, they didn't work, right? Then the 70s, Japan had cars, and they introduced the first small cars right when the gas embargo hit. And then they got into electronics, and we had VCRs and TVs, and pretty much everything started to be made from Japan. You know, and then the 80s, that grew, and of course, Japan became an economic powerhouse, and then they kind of got burdened by their own, you know, increased government and spending, which governments tend to do. But their military is growing because of the growing threat from China. So it's very interesting to see how allegiances and alliances, you know, change. So your former enemy, you know, now is your friend against your new enemy who used to be your former friend, even though they really weren't. this is why international relations gets complicated. But Gene, what do you think? Does this make sense to have Japan build up their military forces despite their history, and as I would advocate, get nuclear weapons in defense against China? Even though that means more nuclear weapons. No.
I get why they're doing it, though, because basically, personally, regardless what country I lived in, I would want that country to have nuclear weapons. Why? Because if other countries have it, you want to have a way to protect yourself, too. Okay. And I think with them, with just what the U.S. did there, you know, they don't want that to happen again.
Yeah. So I'm a little confused. What did you say no to? What was the part that you didn't like?
No, I just hate to think countries have nuclear weapons. That's what I'm saying. But just saying that, I realize why one needs it. And so that's why I'm saying... I'm kind of saying both. I said, you know, I would hope they wouldn't have them, but yet I can see why they would.
If
just,
Japan
just,
having
I just
nuclear...
said, I don't like any country having them. I mean, the destruction of what it can do. I mean, oh my God. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. Now here's the thing. And that's exactly the point I was waiting to bring out. If, you know, Dr. Pryor, he didn't get to his chat. We're going to do it next week, but he's talked before about third and fourth generation nuclear weapons. There are nuclear weapons that are far lower yield and lower powered than conventional weapons. There are nuclear weapons that can take out a bridge. There are nuclear weapons that can, neutron weapons that, you know, kill people and don't destroy property. There are nuclear weapons that you can make an air-to-air missile nuclear. You can make a missile to destroy an aircraft carrier nuclear. Does that mean it's a thermonuclear bomb that'll blow up, you know, hundreds and thousands of square miles? No. No, these new generation weapons, and this is the thing everybody's missing, and this is why I have Dr. Pry on, and why, you know, because I didn't even know about this stuff, right? But the thing is that the nuclear weapons have advanced so much that China and Russia just think of nuclear weapons as weapons. And we need to start thinking about that in that way too, that a nuclear weapon, you know, you imagine all the first thing you think of is that mushroom cloud and that bomb blasting up and all those ships being, you know, surrounded by all the blasts. You know, you think of the Bikini Atoll. Or the H-bomb, that's part of the image in your head, right?
Right, right. But
that's,
you know, I realize
not,
there's other
that's
things
not a modern,
too.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
my thinking is
war.
The
yeah.
big gun. You want the big gun. You don't want the little guns. I mean, the little guns can do a lot of damage too, but you want the big things because that's where, I mean, if someone's coming at you, you want to, I would think, me, just bomb the crap out of them. Get rid of them. Then, you know,
this from the person who said 2 minutes
it.
Ago that nuclear
you know?
Weapons, the country shouldn't have nuclear weapons. Yeah, no, it's fascinating.
No, but
yeah,
no, I really, I don't think they should because of, right, just because of what I just said, the damage you can do. But, you know, I don't want to be the person or the country not having a nuclear weapon and everybody does. And then what? You're gone.
Yeah.
Because if they want your land, boom.
Yeah, and Japan... doesn't have nuclear weapons because they've been under the, quote, United States protection. But I think that protection has been an illusion for many, many years, which is why I think Japan's been building up their conventional weapons. Now, I don't see Japan doing what they did in World War II. I don't think the world would let them. But the world seems to be letting China do exactly the same thing that Japan did 80 years ago, which is make conquests for territory and resources and power and influence and, you know, and control and money. The Chinese Communist Party is every bit the dictatorship that the Empire of Japan under Hirohito was. You know, I don't see a difference. You know, Xi Jinping and General Tojo, who ran, you know, Japan under Hirohito, are very similar people. You know, if of course you say that, that's probably a capital offense in either country. You know, but But, you know, China and Japan have a long history. In fact, it'd be interesting. I might do that one day, is look back, because, you know, China's invaded Japan. Japan's invaded China. They've gone back and forth for, what, 7,000 years? I mean, both their histories. The history of China, Japan, and Korea are some 7,000 years old. Okay. So, you know, our history is barely 2,000 in Christianity in our calendar. You know, we're 2021. Year of our Lord Jesus Christ. Okay, that's where it comes from, folks. But, you know, you look at our country's history. I mean, 1776, we declared our independence. We weren't a country until, you know, a few years later. So we'd beaten the British, you know. So that's nothing. You look at Japan and China and Korea. You know, I think Korea's been occupied by both the Japan and China. Koreans really have a problem. They've gotten some real serious, you know, butt kicking over the millennia. You know, now they're split. And that's too bad. I hope Korea unifies as Germany did. And, you know, but so let's see what happens. But anyway, the idea of Japan, I think, has to increase their nuclear weapons. Mm-hmm. And here's the weird thing, too, just to make another point you were making earlier, deterrence. You know, the reason that countries don't go to war with other countries is because the devastation of nuclear weapons is so bad. The cost isn't worth it. You know, it's not worth losing your nation to try and attack somebody else. So the psychology is you have to make weapons so terrible that the destruction is so unimaginable they can't be used, but they have to be able to be used. It's kind of a weird psychological, you know, twist, but that's deterrence. You know, no nation was ever attacked because they were too strong. So as long as, you know, but then you have to think, well, we should have them because we're the good guys, you know, and they have them, they're the bad guys, but we had our own Americans give nuclear technology to the bad guys, the Rosenbergs and the State Department, other people, you know, gave Russia and North Korea and China our nuclear secrets. Well, why would you empower our enemies? That's just insane. Unless you're like a military contract person and you want to be able to build new weapons, you know, with more money to defeat their weapons that you already gave them, so they're now equal to us. I mean, it's no coincidence that Russian arms, Chinese arms, you know, the jet fighters, even their airliners look like ours. Where do you think they cut the plans from? Us. You know, so it's a weird thing. But Japan needs to rearm. And saying that on Pearl Harbor Day is probably, you know, blasphemy and sacrilegious, but Japan needs to rearm. They do, because we're not going to protect them, and they know it. Anybody want to comment on that? 215-383-3832. Yeah.
Yeah, and the thing is, though, too, no country should, I want to say, believe or rely on another country, because really, like, it's like, let's say I run a country, little country, and another country says, oh, we'll look out for your best interest. You can never trust anybody because every country has their own motive. And I think, especially in the United States, we've unfortunately shown our true colors that we cannot be relied upon or depended on.
Well, yeah,
especially
I think
recently,
the Biden surrender.
You know, so,
you know,
yeah, so it's very sad but true.
Yeah.
And I hate to say every man for themselves, but it's pretty much what it is, every country for themselves, because you can align with someone when crap hits the fan. But, you know, before that, it's like people or countries may say, oh, they got your back, and no, they don't.
Yeah, I mean, the Japanese have to ask themselves, would Brandon go to war with China to defend Japan? I think the answer is obvious. No, he wouldn't. First of all, he probably couldn't find it on a map anymore. But secondly, you know, the people that run him now. Well, let me run a theory by you, too. I mentioned this the other day, and I haven't really done much research because I don't know if you can on something like this. But I think, and we talked about this yesterday, that there's two factions running the White House right now. There's the Obama-Rice, you know, contingent. And then you've got the Hillary Fauci contingent. And, you know, I think they have sort of had kind of a powwow somewhere along the way and sort of split the Brandon insurrection in half. And Hillary and Fauci do the domestic stuff. In fact, it'd be interesting to see if Hillary's profiting off vaccine. Oh, there's a thing next time we have a break, see if you can look up Hillary you know, Pfizer or Moderna and see if she's profiting, you know, somehow from that, or the Clinton Foundation is getting a ton of money. They'd be interested. But I think that's how it's working. Obama's doing the foreign stuff, which is the illegal aliens coming in, the illegal folks from Afghanistan being flown in, you know, all the other stuff. You know, and then Hillary does the vaccines and the marketing of all that kind of stuff, and the mandates and the masks and all that. That seems very Hillary to me, whereas it seems very Obama to bring in all kinds of Muslim goat herders and their five-year-old wives. I do use that expression for a reason, because that's what came to our country. You know, goat herders, old goat herders, and five-year-old wives. That is a true story. Okay, I'm not making that up, even though it disgusts me to say it every time. But that sounds like very Obama. I mean, that's how we got Ilhan Omar, you know, and the little Somalia, in Minnesota, and that's how we got various other communities here, and, you know, refugees that weren't refugees that have been sitting around for too long. You know, do you see does that make sense as to how the Brandon forces are divided up? And then who does Saki
work
for?
Yeah, that makes total
for Obama.
Sense. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Interesting. Well, if you get a chance, and we're going to be play probably our Santa Rosa Volunteers piece here in just a little bit. I just want to go over this, what's going on in Japan right now. So if you want to check this article out, again, it's MSN. I guess, is that mainstream news? Or what does MSN stand for with a little butterfly?
I think so.
All right, so mainstream news. Okay, anyway. So it's AP from 14 hours ago. Oh, that's probably old. It's look up Murray Yamaguchi, report on Japan. Apparently they're having huge exercises right now. That's why this is being alerted. So the article says, just across the sea from rival Russia, Japan opened up its humbly named self-defense forces firing exercises to the media in a display of public firepower that coincides with a recent escalation of Chinese and Russian military moves around Japanese territory. So this is what they call saber rattling. Okay, this is when they're flexing your muscles. You know, in other words, this is like a gorilla thumping his chest. This is to show that, yeah, if you want to come here, it's going to cost you, all right? So the drills, back to the article, which foreign journalists rarely have a chance to witness, that's interesting, will continue for 9 days, including about 1,300 ground self-defense force troops. On Monday, as hundreds of soldiers cheered from the sidelines and waved unit flags, lines of tanks shot at targets meant to represent enemy missiles or armored vehicles. The exercises illuminate a fascinating, easy-to-miss point. Japan, despite an officially pacifist constitution written when memories of his World War II rampage were still fresh and painful, boasts a military that puts all but a few nations to shame. That's the whole key to the article right there. Okay, the exercise illuminates a fascinating, easy-to-miss point. Japan, despite an officially pacifist constitution written when memories of his World War II rampage were still fresh and painful, boasts a military that all but a few nations to shame. Who knew? I mean, I wasn't sure of that. It says, and with a host of threats lurking in Northeast Asia, its hawkish leaders are eager for more. Yeah, so Japan's arming. You know, I don't think we have the rather mellow Shinzo Abe, former Prime Minister of Japan. I think they've become much more hawkish, which is going to be, a lot of people are going to go, okay, well, we're just sort of cautiously watching this. Anyway, it says, it's not an easy sell, and a nation still reviled by many of its neighbors for its past military actions, and where domestic pacifism runs high, any military buildup is controversial. Japan is focused on its defensive capabilities and carefully avoids using the word military for its troops. But as it looks to defend its territorial and military interests against an assertive China, North Korea, and Russia, that's a hell of an alliance, officials in Tokyo are pushing citizens to put aside widespread unease over a more robust role for the military and support increased defense spending. There you go. And this is, as it is, tens of billions of dollars each year have built an arsenal of nearly 1,000 warplanes and dozens of destroyers and submarines. Japan's forces rival those of Britain and France and show no sign of slowing down in the pursuit of the best equipment and weapons money can buy. Yeah, Japanese are technologically, you know, really good. So they can make really good stuff, and more power to them. I think they actually designed their own planes, but they may have, I think some of their fighters look like our F-16s. And I'm sure there's a lot of, trading with Japan, because after all, they're an ally, right? Critics of both Japan's neighbors and at home urge Tokyo to learn from its past and pull back from military expansion. I think it's a little too late for that. With China expanding as fast as it is under a totalitarian communist dictatorship, I don't think Japan has a choice. I think they'd be stupid not to build up and to make it so impossible for China to try and do anything to Japan. It's just not worth China's while. I think the same thing has to happen with South Korea. They have to build up incredibly. And so they are not an object of anybody, because they're so powerful. And so, again, it's Sun Tzu. You know, it's the art of war. And so back to the article, there's also domestic wariness over nuclear weapons, which we talked about a little bit ago. Japan, the only nation to have atomic bombs dropped on it in war, possesses no nuclear deterrent, unlike other top global militaries, and relies on the so-called U.S. nuclear umbrella. Well, I think that umbrella closed a long time ago. Article says proponents of the new military muscle flexing, however, say the expansion is well-timed and crucial to the Japanese alliance with Washington. That's because we've got nobody in the White House, folks. President nobody. Article says China and Russia have stepped up military cooperation in recent years in an attempt to counter growing U.S.-led regional partnerships. That's the Quad. That's what Claire used to talk about. Article says in October, a fleet of 5 warships, each from China and Russia, circled Japan as they traveled through the Pacific to the East China Sea. Well, isn't that nice? You know, how would we feel if Russian and Chinese warships were up and down the east and west coast? you know, well, we're just sightseeing. Okay. Yeah. At the same time, it's circling Japan. All right, Japan's an island. Actually, it's three islands. Then they said last month their warplanes, that would be China's and Russia's warplanes, flew together near Japan's airspace, causing Japanese jets to scramble. Are you ready for this? In fiscal year 2020 through March, Japanese fighters scrambled more than 700 times. That's 1 year, folks. Two-thirds against Chinese warplanes, with the remainder mostly against Russians. That's from the Defense Ministry. So 700 times, that's like twice a day, 365 days a year. Okay, 700 times the fighters scrambled against Chinese, Russian, and probably North Korean warships, airplanes, things like that. And you don't think they have to rebuild their defenses? I think they'd be crazy not to. But I do think they need tactical, what they call tactical nuclear weapons. Okay, Russia recent military also, you know, okay, nothing more to say about, okay, you can read the rest of the article. It says here, today Japan is ranked fifth globally in overall military power after the United States, Russia, China, and India. And its defense budget ranked sixth in 2021, ranking of 140 countries by the Global Firepower Rating site. And so there you go. So you can read more about this. It's a longer article. It's really interesting. If I had more time, I might get back to it. I've got like three others I didn't even touch. Let me take a few minutes now. Let's play our Santa Rosa Volunteers piece, because things tend to get busy on Tuesday. Let me just ask Jean, though, if she has a comment on Japan nuclear weapons, arming itself, the U.S. umbrella. Just you know, tell me, you know, like I say, you don't have to be a technological expert. I'm just curious your opinion. What do you think they should do, and from what they are doing?
Jean,
put on the spot here. I put Jean on the spot. I just, you know,
solve a little problem, Jean.
Yeah,
I really don't know. It's like I would say, gosh, yeah, They need to do something, but mm-hmm. I think they just, oh gosh, it's so hard.
Well, here's the thing. You don't want a war. Okay.
No, not at all.
Okay. And I agree with you. I don't want a war either. But the question is, do you prevent a war by not arming, or do you prevent a war by arming? I think that's really what it comes down to.
I would say by arming is the thing. Okay. That's me personally.
Mm-hmm. You don't have to like it. That's just the way it is. Let me get a quick comment from Pianki, and then I'm going to go play our piece, because, like I say, once we get Shelby and Jelly and Paulette and Chansey, things get pretty busy around here with all kinds of – and we like the show. I like the variety of the show. That's why I have these people on. Pianki, it's your article that I'm going over today, so what do you think?
Well, it shows you got an inept administration in the White House.
Well, we have a criminal coup in the White House.
In the White House, yes.
And why would you expect a criminal coup, a real insurrection, to do anything logical or even legal? There's no accountability for them to do anything legal, logical, or rational, which means, you know, if they're not even loyal to the American people, why would they be loyal to our Japanese allies? There's no reason.
And they have
to.
No moral compass.
That too. Good point. Pianki?
And then you get... I guess you talked about China's plans to put a naval base there on the west coast of Africa.
Oh, that's interesting. Where's that going to be?
In Guinea. That's what I read in the article.
Oh, okay. I'll check that out again. Yeah, I didn't get that far. And like I said, you know, I try and read these things, but I wish I could go all the way through. I'll go through it again, because it's interesting. A lot of times I reread stuff after the show just to, you know, see if I missed something, but I missed that. So that's interesting.
That'd be like
That'd
be just like the Cuban Missile.
Mm-hmm. Well, we won that one.
All over again.
See, now we won that because we had superior armament. If Brandon was you know, stealing the White House when Khrushchev wanted to attack Cuba, can you imagine the same outcome as with Kennedy? There's no way. Russia wouldn't back down from Brandon. They would have kept the missiles.
No.
There.
Oh, God, no.
Okay. So this is why it's so dangerous. This is why I prayed every day that, you know, Obama didn't do something, you know, even more stupid than he did every other day, you know, and got us into a war with somebody through his lack of action, you know, leading from behind, which is what we used to call following, you know. So, yeah, that was a whole different story. All right, well, let me play our Santa Rosa piece, and if we have some more time, Santa Rosa Volunteers piece. We have a little more time before Shelby gets here, and we can talk about that. But, and we can take this up again. And, you know, this is going to be an oft-repeated topic, but especially, you know, for the folks who are there at Pearl Harbor, and I've met Pearl Harbor survivors. You know, it's very interesting to talk to them. And just studying the war as I did. In fact, we had Jerome Bell. And I remember when he was on the show running for Congress, he has the same belief I do. I think he has more evidence of it, though, that we knew the attack was coming, that Roosevelt let it happen specifically to get us into the war. And things like that are done all the time. You know, the
right.
Greer and the Gulf of Tonkin incident, the Lusitania was sunk to get us, you know, they allowed that to get us in World War One. They put a bunch of, you know, bullets and guns and artillery shells and everything else. That ship was loaded to the gills with military stuff. It was not a passenger liner. So the reasons we get, you know, remember the Maine, you know, Spanish-American War, remember the Lusitania, World War One, remember the Greer, you know, Gulf of Tonkin, you know, Vietnam, remember Pearl Harbor, World War Two, remember, you know, 9/11, you know, Iraq and Afghanistan, which had very little to do with, you know, 9/11, because Iran was the people behind it. So it's a very interesting thing. Anyway, let me play you this, and then if we have a couple of minutes, I'm curious about both of your opinions, both Bianchi and Gene on the show here, on my idea that we should take another look at the Articles of Confederation and see with a few amendments, would that not be a better founding document, a better document for us than the current Constitution, given how much the Constitution has been completely subverted. And the power of the judiciary and the executive and the lack of power in Congress, but their ability to spend money is basically ruining this country. And I'll be back. Tell me what you think when we come back. This is Greg Penglis for Action Radio with Founding Moments, insights into our founding documents, sponsored by Santa Rosa Volunteers here in Santa Rosa County, Florida. Santa Rosa Volunteers is available at their website, srv1776.com. That's srv1776.com. The more I read of the prophecy apparent in the anti-Federalist Papers, forecasting the end of liberty and the beginning of federal oppression, should the Constitution be ratified, the more I'm convinced the anti-Federalists were right, and that a modification of the Articles of Confederation would have been the far better course for this nation over ratifying the Constitution. We might have avoided our Civil War, and we might have even avoided the Marxist coup that stole our federal government with the willing cooperation of both major political parties. Anti-Federalist No. 7 was written by Philanthropus, an anonymous citizen of Virginia, and published December 6, 1787. In his opening sentences, he talks about both his time in 1787 and our time in 2021. The time in which the Constitution or government of a nation undergoes any particular change is always interesting and critical. Enemies are vigilant. Allies are in suspense, friends hesitating between hope and fear, and all men are in eager expectation to see what such a change may produce. But the state of our affairs at present is of such moment as even to arouse the dead. In his time, it was whether the Constitution would be ratified and what would happen to liberty. In our time, it's what has happened to overthrow constitutional government, and will it be restored? Once again, in prophecy, Philanthropus describes his time and ours. The new Constitution in its present form is calculated to produce despotism, thraldom, and confusion, and if the United States do swallow it, they will find it a bolus that will create convulsions to their utmost extremities. Were they mine enemies, the worst imprecation I could devise would be, may they adopt it. Forecasting some of our most grievous problems arising during the Constitution in force today, he said this: the Congress is having power without control to borrow money on the credit of the United States. They're having power to appoint their own salaries, and they're being paid out of the treasury of the United States, thereby, in some measure, rendering them independent of the individual states. They're being judges of the qualification and election of their own members, which by means they can get men to suit any purpose. Philanthropus then urges the continuation of the Articles of Confederation with these words:
Our present Constitution, with a few additional powers to Congress, seems better calculated to preserve the rights and defend the liberties of our citizens than the one proposed, without proper amendments. Let us therefore, for once, show our judgment and solidity by continuing it and prove the opinion to be erroneous, that levity and fickleness are not only the foibles of our tempers, but the reigning principles in these states. Regarding the men who would change to the new Constitution, he says, "There are men amongst us of such dissatisfied tempers that place them in heaven, they would find something to blame, and so restless and self-sufficient that they must be eternally reforming the state. But the misfortune is, they always leave affairs worse than they find them. A change of government is at all times dangerous, but at present may be fatal, without the utmost caution, just after emerging out of a tedious and expensive war." In conclusion, Philanthropus gives us a plea for caution and a warning of what might happen with the ratification of the Constitution. He was more right than he ever could have imagined. He says, "In the most limited governments, what wranglings, animosities, factions, partiality, and all other evils that tend to embroil a nation and weaken a state are constantly practiced by legislators. What then may we expect if the new Constitution be adopted as it now stands? The great will struggle for power, honor, and wealth. The poor become a prey to avarice, insolence, and oppression. And while some are studying to supplant their neighbors and others striving to keep their stations, one villain will wink at the oppression of another, the people will be fleeced, and the public business neglected. From despotism and tyranny, good Lord, deliver us." Maybe it's time to review the Articles of Confederation as a potential return form of government, as a way to break the insane power and control currently exercised by a federal government supposedly limited to certain delegated powers. The source for the Federalist Papers is federalistpapers.org. The Anti-Federalist Papers are from selfeducatedamerican.com. The Articles of Confederation are from usconstitution.net. This is Greg Penglis for Action Radio with Founding Moments, sponsored by Santa Rosa Volunteers. Their website is srv1776.com. That's srv1776.com. Please share this report to anyone who needs it.
Action Radio. Dangerously cool.
And of course, Shelby called in as soon as I started the piece. It was kind of interesting, but I think it's kind of cool to hear. All right, so it's got a quick question for Bianca and Jean before we get to cruise and travel. What do you think? Do you think it's worth our while looking at the Articles of Confederation as the anti-federalists looked at the Constitution and say, you know what, maybe this thing deserves another look here in terms of the future of our country and the future of our freedom, given the fact that, you know, so much has been abused under the Constitution and even using the Constitution, you know, to borrow money and to create all kinds of, you know, just really government mayhem out there. Bianca, I'm going to start with you real quick, then we'll get to Jean. She has a comment, and then, of course, we'll do cruise and travel. Bianca, what do you think?
Well, they've done a good job with the U.S. Constitution.
Okay.
And the Bill of Rights. Could that have been better? Yes, it could have been a little bit better in areas. It could have, the wording could have been more stronger.
Yeah.
That could have been something that would have been more applicable to life itself. But overall, they've done a very good job. And it's not what you have today, especially on the courts. You have judges that's trying to make laws rather than compare a present law with the overall realm of the Constitution itself. Mm-hmm. And that's where it lies the fault. When you listen at these arguments, you can see that in the back of their minds.
You know, it's interesting. One of the strongest parts of the Constitution is the Bill of Rights, and that was the part left out. by the Federalists. In fact, I'm going to go back through the Articles of Confederation and pull out the rights that were left out with the new Constitution. Jean, you got a quick comment on this? And then I want to get to travel here.
I could see where it would be a good thing to look at, but my concern would be then if people in the future don't mm-hmm. like what the Constitution says, then it's their way to get back in and change it just because they don't, you know, we already set a precedent.
Well, it's not easy to change. And in fact, it would still go through the normal process. Either the states, you know, have a convention of states and ratify an amendment or actually ratify the – that actually probably have to be a new constitutional convention. I just think it's more interesting to look at this point to see. But, yeah, the amending the Constitution is very difficult, and it's supposed to be difficult. That's a good thing. So it doesn't get amended easily. And we'd still have that regular process. We wouldn't be setting any new precedents. What we'd be doing is sort of analyzing. So maybe the best course is to look at the articles and see if there are some specific amendments we want to make to the Constitution rather than returning to Articles of Confederation. I think kind of a staggering thing to kind of play with a little bit. Shelby, you got an opinion on this before we get to travel? I know you came in a little late.
No,
too.
I came in too late to have an opinion on it.
Okay. Well, if you get a chance to listen, we'll get to next week.
I love the Action Radio.
What, the new website or what?
Jingle.
Or just our whole
the
thing here?
Yeah, the website's great too, but I meant the jingle that you just, Action Radio, whatever you just said. It was very cute. I liked it.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, dangerously cool. Yeah, that was kind of fun.
Yeah, dangerously cool. Thank you.
Yeah, I have two of them, actually. I'll play the other one after your theme, so we'll be right back.
Yeah, man. Come with Shelby to faraway places, wonderful beaches, exotic foods, meet new and fascinating people as Action Radio cruise and travel reporter Shelby Finette takes you to where dreams become your reality and experiences become your best memories. Yeah, man. Here we go.
Action Radio, dedicated to fixing everything.
See what happens when you let me loose with production software?
Anything's possible. Great. I think you did just wonderful.
Well, thank you.
Very cool. How you doing?
I'm having a great time. We got Pianki and Gina. I'm loving it. I'm looking forward to CPAC. Hopefully you can be there. We can all meet. I want to get as many of our Action Radio folks there as possible. And I think, so life is looking pretty good right now. How are you?
Good. Oh, you know, still a struggle.
Okay.
You know, I think the most interesting piece of info that's come out that'll probably enrage you is that Canada is no longer allowing their citizens to leave the country without being vaccinated, to leave their country without being vaccinated. And even under whatever medical thing you might have, a disclosure or something to prevent you from having the vaccine, they are not allowing people to leave the country without vaccines, flying or train or boat. I think physically maybe walking in the border might have a different situation, but I'm not sure because I just found out this morning. But I think it just keeps going. It's just going further and further. It's not letting up. It's not, people are not complaining. I have lots of Canadian friends. I hear nothing. In fact, I was surprised the other day. I was teaching at a really rich resort. And they have, they always had multiple houses, and this is in Florida. And I said, oh, I haven't seen you in so long to the member. And she said, yeah, well, we were in Canada where we were safe. And it's like, oh, okay. So, they were like, it just didn't make any sense to be here with this crazy governor. And, we wanted to be in Canada where we were safe. And I was like, that's great. Well, great to have you back. But yeah, it's no complaints.
Yeah, they're through the looking
Canadian
glass. Folks.
There are so few Canadians that are upset. There's a few, of course, naturally, but so few. Most of them are that the whole rest of the world is crazy and that they're smart. So it's a very
interesting. This is the problem. This is what infuriates me, is that they've got it all backwards. And we know they have a background. You know, we've got hundreds of studies. There's like 300 studies of ivermectin, another 300 studies of hydroxychloroquine. You know, we know what works. We know what doesn't work. Lockdowns don't work. Lockdowns, you know, created the next wave of COVID, as did the masks. You know, the whole stress that everybody was put under and the lockdowns and the economic destruction and the suicides and the assaults and the drug addictions and everything else that happened. You know, that's the crazy part. So what really infuriates me beyond anything else is that the evidence is so obviously out there. The real story is so obviously out there, and these people are so willing to believe, you know, they're tyrants. They're so willing to accept, you know, bondage. You know, and it used to be a hallmark of the free societies, the Western democracies, as they were called, that people were free to come and go from their countries. You know, we used to talk about China and Russia as being totalitarian dictatorships because they didn't even let their people leave. You know, the Berlin Wall. I actually saw the Berlin Wall. Okay, I crossed the Berlin Wall through Checkpoint Charlie. You know, East German communists wouldn't let their people leave. They even built a wall. Actually, they built two walls with about 200 yards between it, with, you know, guard dogs, machine guns, mines, anything else. You know, concertina wire, the whole bit. So I know about walls. And I know about, you know, and I've seen these countries where they don't let people go. And the idea that that's acceptable all of a sudden, in Canada and various other countries, in Australia, in Germany and Austria. God knows they don't have a great history when it comes to their own people and persecution. As we celebrate, well, not celebrate this, we remember, you know, Pearl Harbor Day, start of World War II. You know, you got countries around the world with a really bad history of oppression and in some cases Holocaust, you know, and now they're restricting their people again. So this is nonsense. And here's the really crazy part. COVID, if you listen to our Friday show, you know, Gene and I and Pianchi, I had this article on the 50 most dangerous infectious diseases out there. COVID doesn't even rate. It's not even close. You know, Gene, did we ever get that ranking of where COVID is in the grand scheme of things? You know, it's less than 1% mortality. Only about 5% of the people who, you know, are listed as a COVID death actually died from COVID. The rest died with it. You know, so it's a fantasy.
That's why we didn't, because so many people that died of were labeled dying as COVID. You know, You can't really say that because of lack of treatment.
Yeah. Well, that's a different issue. But I mean, the lack of treatment is killing people. You know, most people are dying from medical malpractice. They're not dying from COVID. That they're saying are dying from COVID. That we know. So the other problem is that this disease is a less than 1% mortality. You know, kids under 18 are statistically at zero risk from COVID. You know, you got school districts making them wear masks, and they're getting this GMO RNA shot, which is incredibly dangerous. You know, and I know Shelby can disagree. Shelby's probably taking notes, waiting. So, well, this is where I disagree with you, Greg. You know, I'm just waiting. Okay, we'll get there.
To be noted that I don't agree with everything you say.
That doesn't mean
I disagree with everything, but that's one of the fears of coming on a show like this, is that my views are sort of like meshed into whatever the station's views are.
No. Let me make a disclaimer. In fact, let me do the alert here. Where's my favorite alert? Here we go. Wait just a second. And now an official management announcement from the management of Action Radio. Shelby's opinions are her own. They do not reflect the management, I guess that's me, of Action Radio. So feel free to say whatever you want. It is your opinion and your opinion only. I have my opinion. Gene has her opinion. Pianchi has his opinion. Everybody, there is no restriction on anybody's opinion. I want your disagreement. You're one of the bright sparks of the week, to be able to actually, you know, so that we can engage in some debate, because most people don't even want to come on the show and do that. And we have live chat too. But people can even type in their messages, and we're not getting that much right now. So we used to have one person, but they haven't done that for a bit. But yeah, feel free to disagree all you want. I don't mind. I love it. I welcome it.
I find it fascinating that people are open arms embracing this, and again and again, I just will choose. I don't even want to call it safety, because it's like it's beyond safety, and it doesn't really all add up. Even though I think the information is misinformation most of the time from whatever source, you know, whether it's one side or the other is always trying to make their point so strongly that the middle ground isn't really seen very often. Like when you say things like, people died not of COVID, but of complications. My thought to that is, well, if they didn't have COVID, they probably wouldn't have died of the complications. So it's ultimately, I wouldn't say it should be classified as COVID, but it's related. and you know, it wouldn't have instigated whatever the problem was. So that is happening. However, I also agree that nobody knows what this vaccine is going to do in 3 years. So all of us that took it, it's like, well, who knows? That's unfair to us, especially we don't have a choice in the matter. I don't like that. And I've never been a fan of the FDA in a big way because they're more bad than good at this point. But, you know, that's just all the nutrition background that I have. And, you know, it's and I'm not against vaccines. I'm really not. I think that this one, I definitely was hesitant. And if it was my choice, I don't like not having choices, that's for sure. Mm-hmm. But I definitely don't feel like it would be a choice that I would like to make. You know, it's not fair. But most people think it's great. And in what I find really fascinating and sad is that people that are on the other side that really want the other side of you, the opposition of what you're saying, who really want everyone to be vaccinated. I have heard friends of mine say words such as, well, whatever, if the unvaccinated die, that's good, that's their fault, that's their choice. And I'm just like horrified by this.
Yeah, that's pretty
because
bad.
Because it's like, what about if we die? Because, you know, when you get vaccinated, what if we die? Like from the vaccine, should they just go dumbasses, good for you? And I've heard that on from other sides as well. I've heard it from yours, not you, from your side of the spectrum where it's like, well, those people that got vaccinated are all going to die. They're all stupid. I just find this whole idea that one side, you know, really does believe for the most part that it's okay for the other side to die. It's just horrible. And science is an evolving thing. I'm a science major. And the censorship drives me crazy, and it makes it very suspect because I'm in social media and I'm a science major, and I can't believe how much of the censorship has gone on. And that to me is always just incredibly suspect, whether or not you're driving the truth or not. To censor things always makes me feel as if you're hiding what's right and telling us what's wrong. So that's also very worrisome. And then again, of course, my specific situation is a little different. My dad already passed away. I'm not with any elderly people, direct contact. We are very healthy. You know, we've already had COVID through the house. So I would like to have made my own decisions that way. But, you know, it's this forcible thing. And if it wasn't for travel, and, you know, I really wish I would have gotten out of the travel business, you know, when this all happened. I really regret that fully. It was a very bad decision. But it's been, you know, for us, a forcible thing because they don't allow us to do what we need to do. And so it's not like a workforce thing where the president says 100 employees, but if we want to take groups out and we want to go cruising and such, we do have to be vaccinated. So these are choices that are being taken away from us, and that really frustrates me. And who knows what's going to happen long term to all of this. And then there is a pill that they have decided, FDA has approved. They have decided that it works 100% of the time. I saw one of the studies, 100% of the time it did all. They did a very small study between 300 and 1,000 people. But then I saw, you know, conflicting information on the same study, which is really suspect. Not that I can believe the news anymore. But, you know, that's to me, it's like, well, why aren't we at least hearing about this pill? Because if we're hearing about a pill that can cure it, that's probably ivermectin-based, but we don't really know. But
that's
similar
exactly what I was
type
thinking.
Of thing.
Yeah, that's
but
a huge point.
But regardless,
yeah.
It's just like, I don't want to argue that point because it's not important.
Yeah.
It's really not. It's a dead subject. But, like, so FDA decides that there is a pill that cures it, also might cause sterilization in boys, by the way, but whatever. That doesn't seem very, very important to anybody anymore.
Oh, there you go. You're back.
And,
okay.
Yeah, but at the end of the day, they basically have a pill that the FDA approved, and nobody's heard about it. And I'm like, well, why are we killing everyone? Not. I don't mean killing as in – because people are not – there are some people that die from the vaccine, but not a hell of a lot. I know most people that I know have been vaccinated. They're absolutely fine. You know, so I don't know why we're shoving it down everyone's throat, though, when we do have a pill that's approved to cure it. But we're not talking about that at all. We're talking about locking down borders and not allowing people out of countries if they don't have vaccinations. So I'm so confused as to how that is the subject of the day. And it's it's just a shocking thing. And travel's open. I mean, like, listen, Canada is weird as all hell. Like, I don't even understand. But they think we're crazy. I mean, the Canadian people that want to travel with us said, well, our problem is we have a crazy governor. I said, well, I'm really happy that the governor didn't shut us down. Yeah, exactly.
Oh, yeah.
I'm happy that we weren't shut down, but the Canadians think that DeSantis is crazy. And, you know, well, that's what they've been taught. And I'm like, well, you know what's crazy is we're open and we have lives and you don't. And, you know, and that's crazy. But, you know, that's not something that is really their mentality. Their mentality, one of my guests that's due to travel with us in February, he's like, I don't know what the Omicron. I was like, well, what the hell is going on with the Omicron? Like, it's another variant.
Nothing.
Yes, we're going to have variants. Like, that's a virus. Like, it's going to happen. Why is this a surprise to anybody? And it doesn't seem to be killing anyone. They're all vaccinated people that are getting infected with the Omicron virus, and they don't seem to be dying or being hospitalized. So what is the problem? What is the problem? It's another variant of this virus that they let out of a lab, very likely. And here we are, like, moving right along. Like, what else do you want? Like, there is nothing else to do. We got vaccinated. We've got, you know, these pills. We've got everybody seems to be okay. What is the problem? Why are we still talking about this?
Well, because COVID, the marketing campaign. That's why. Here's a funny thing. That was an amazing amount of information. I've got a bunch of notes here. We actually agree far more than we disagree. What we really disagree on is the perception of the information. And so that there are people that are taking, you know, their source of information and believing one thing. And folks, you know, I'm looking at, you know, folks like Dr. Judy Mikovits, Dr. Zelenko. I'm looking at Dr. Scott Atlas, who is on the commission. I'm looking at a lot of the Dr. Simone Gold. I'm looking at the folks, the non-government doctors on the cutting edge of this, who are really talking about what's going on, what's working to save their patients. So I look for the source. And I always, my filter is reason and logic. Okay, and so there's a lot of things going on with this, but you know, and your specialty is social media, which is perception, and so your insights into the perceptions are what I think are the most valuable, and the things that I disagree with the most, not disagree with you, but disagree with the folks that are going with their perceptions and their assumptions rather than looking at what's actually going on, and this is what I find internally frustrating. But the biggest thing we agree on is the idea of choice. Now I have heard about vaccine problems for probably 20 some odd 30 years now. And so whereas I thought it was a good idea when I was a kid, because I didn't have a choice, you know, as an adult, I thought, well, do we really need to get, you know, boosters and this and that? And you know what? I don't think so. I got the MMR vaccine, you know, supposed to prevent mumps. And of course I got the mumps. I'm thinking, well, that didn't work. You know, I had a doctor, my daughter got chickenpox. And they prescribed, you know, 2 weeks of this medicine to prevent chickenpox. Well, then I found out the incubation period for chickenpox is 3 weeks. So they missed a week. So I got it during, you know, so that was another failure of medicine. So I'm not really big on medicine. Why I got heart surgery, I sometimes question, but it worked. You know, that to me made sense at the time. So the biggest problem with all this is the lack of choice, and I think the lack of quality information. The censorship of news, and you and I both agree on this, that if all the facts were out there, if Dr. Zelenko were just as free to hold press conferences and be interviewed on CNN as some of the other folks, as Dr. Fascist are, you know, I call him Dr. Fascist for a reason, because he gets all the access to the media he wants. He tells his story, and there's a lot of people that say this guy's a total whack job, that he has no idea what he's talking about. He hasn't handled a patient, hasn't seen a patient, you know, maybe ever, you know, his medical career, you know. So this is a very, very scary thing that, and these countries locking down, which goes to the theory that people prefer bondage over freedom. You know, this is why
they
those
do.
Of us, the,
this
it's
is
really,
the truth, and I think
this
is where
part.
I feel like
yeah.
so hopeless with the future, is that I firmly believe, at least from what I've seen, is that there's no point in putting too much effort into anything until it's so bad that no one can handle it and they've got nothing to lose. And that takes a long time before the Berlin Wall comes down. It gets so bad, and it's really bad for a long time. It's not a little bad. It's really bad. And people end up – and, you know, shockingly, the government and people in power are always doing the same stupid thing where they really don't give – people anything, and so they really do get put them in the place where it's like they've got nothing to lose, which is so stupid because they could give them a little, but they don't. You know, they continuously persecute, and it's like this. It's just a very odd situation in my eyes, because you could be so, everything could be so much better if we were working on stuff that was good, but they work so hard to hurt, and the only time there's a real revolution is when it's so bad that the whole world doesn't have anything, you know, in the tipping scale, like when 60, 70, 80% have nothing, that's when there's finally a revolution. And then the build up to even that. And even once you get the revolution, it's not easy after that either. I mean, just look at what in 1776, I mean, it certainly wasn't easy even for, you know, decades and decades and decades after.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, this time in life is, I don't want to put too much energy into the fight because it's unfortunately not bad enough yet. And people just aren't going to rally behind anything and do anything monumental that's changing it. And what I see is the majority are very happy with the safety precautions put in place, whether or not they know if they'll be safe long term, not important. And of course there is, you know, an exception of a vaccine. And I'm very familiar with vaccination as well. You know, the good, the bad, the ugly. It's something that I studied, like Vaccine Nation. I always tell people to YouTube that. That's a really interesting, Vaccine Nation is a very interesting movie on YouTube. Very educational, but, at the end of the day, it's not bad enough. It's not bad enough. It's not nearly bad enough. And that's unfortunate. So all this buzzing, I just find to be a little bit like, it's just, so it's a lot of energy and it doesn't move the needle. That's the problem that I see. That makes me so sad. And I, you know, I admire what you do and what other people are trying to do. I just find it to be like, I can't get too involved in it because I listen to the majority and the sentiment. And the sentiment is they are believing everything they hear and they are okay to put themselves at risk for later rather than, you know, they just want an answer now and people want things now and people are used to vaccines. They feel comfortable with them.
Mm-hmm.
They don't know what's in them. And you know, there's this social post.
The comfortable with that.
There's a social post that so many people are so behind and it drives me crazy because it's like, it's just so full of misinformation, but it says something like, you know, I don't know what's in paracetamol. I don't know what's in Advil. I don't know what's in a McDonald's burger. I don't know what's in Diet Coke, but I take those things. Why do I care?
And well,
people get behind
food.
This post. It's a viral
you know,
post.
They're not food. That's why.
You know,
yeah.
And it's like, well, first of all, like I don't, that isn't food. I don't eat that. And I don't let my kid eat that. And it is bad. And we have cancer now. Just heard a commercial cancer. 1 in 2 women and 1 in 3 men can expect to have cancer in their lifetime. So fabulous.
I already have skin
Great.
Cancer. You know, I mean, yeah. I'm one of those 1 in 2 men. I've already had skin cancer. So, you know, hey, I've had cancer.
No, I'm sorry.
It was melanoma. It would have killed
yeah,
me.
Ravi,
you know, but
awesome.
I got it cured.
It's
care of it,
such
yeah.
a rampant issue, but no one's talking about the fact that it's the poisons in the systems that are toxic. It's so toxic for our bodies, and our bodies can tolerate toxins. We are meant to detoxify and on a regular basis regenerate, but we can't deal with too many toxins. Just like anything else, it gets overwhelming, and the body starts to have deformed cells and other issues.
Or too many vaccines when you're young.
Cells.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
But of course, you know, but then again, you talk to someone that went through polio and they'll tell you that that vaccine really worked very well and is a very good thing. Like people, I don't doubt that most people would agree polio, smallpox, which is one of the only human viruses that's ever been eradicated, actually, through a vaccine. But anyway, there's,
you know, the difference.
Go ahead, Pam.
The difference with polio is that people volunteered to do that. It wasn't forced. I and my family haven't took a vaccination and don't intend to. That's where the problem comes on. When you have government telling people what they should do with their body, and worse off, that you have to have your child vaccinated too,
yeah,
and you don't want to have
that.
Your child.
I agree with that wholeheartedly. I think it's and the other problem is that it really hasn't been tested, and that's the other thing that, you know, it's not voluntary, and this is risk-reward. Like, listen, with the plague killed 30% of the people infected. With this, it's you know,
less than
a
one.
Little fraction of a percent, so it's like it's not the same. And again, like, you know, it's not voluntary, first of all, like you said, and the other thing is that we don't have, like, background on this, so... You know, anyone that says they're not hesitant, almost I question more, because why wouldn't you wonder, since there is no way but a time traveler to know what the future is that happens to those of us that take the vaccine. Nobody knows. So how could you say that that's good, but you don't know. And with the small percentage of people that are dying.
Yeah, it's
and high percentage of people that are dying.
Greg read, you read off the other day, 50 of the worst diseases in the world.
That was Friday.
COVID
yeah, that was an interesting show. Yeah.
The thing is, they're talking that the people that had the vaccine, the deaths aren't going to start really coming until next year. But the problem is, I think, with our society now is we want a quick fix. We're like impatient little kids. We don't want to deal with things. Let's just take a shot, get on with our life. The thing is, with COVID, the life we knew before is never going to be that life again. And so I have a lot of friends, and I'd say probably only one of all my friends that have been vaccinated agree with the vaccination in the fact that she's like, just get it and get the booster and be done with it. Everybody else that I know that have gotten at least the initial rounds, you say they're not going to get the next one, and they are totally wishing they went to got the vaccine when they got it.
But they're okay.
My friends, we're still trying to figure out my sister because she just started to have heart issues. And so I actually talked to my mom last night about it. And I said, do you think it's related to the COVID shot? And I haven't talked to my sister yet. I'm going to talk to her this weekend. But everybody else I know that has got the vaccine, they are okay. But I mean, I've had patients that had the vaccine and are not.
Well, the people that have a COVID that are not okay too. And like my son got COVID and he had some heart issues as well. He passed out. That was before the vaccine and everything. So, and we know that it affects the heart tissue. So this is a virus that affects the heart tissue. It would make sense that the vaccine would also have some issues with that too, because of the fact that it's partly, replicating it. But we don't know. And one of the other things I don't like is when people are like, well, in a year, people will die. Someone on this show was like, 3 years, everyone's going to die. It's like, oh, my God, you don't know that.
No, but
either.
The thing
like,
is.
It's the same as saying that you're going to die from it. Like, you don't know. It doesn't know you're going to die from it or not.
You don't know. But the thing is, I think if there's a possibility, like if that's what some of the research is showing, we need to make people aware of that. And it's like the people that are saying that, where are they getting that information from? I mean, these are people that, how would you say, know what they're talking about. Or at least they know what they're talking about based on their credentials.
The thing that I don't understand, why would they go through such extensive efforts to remove the liability off of the vaccination? Polio vaccination did not have liability removed.
I don't think you can really.
That's a good question.
I don't think you care what happened with the polio vaccine to today. I mean, we're such a litigious society, first of all. But it's certainly. I think it's just wrong that they wouldn't be able to be held accountable. But this is Monsanto's design. They started with this where they're not going to be liable for really anything, and all of the drug companies follow suit. So this is the flawed legal system. No big companies have to take accountability, for any wrongdoing.
Well, that's our job here, to change that by proposing legislation that citizens get behind. And if enough people do get behind it, then they'll have a huge election impact and impact on Congress. And then when they say, well, we can't, we're working on this issue, and we say, well, it's already been done. We already have a bill at Action Radio, and our brand new website, by the way, writeyourlaws.com, is looking fabulous. But to go to all proposed laws under the legislation menu, and you'll find our bill that puts full liability back on the vaccine manufacturers. It's really not a complicated bill. I just go specifically to the exact section of law that does that. It's easy as it's really as easy as saying where they said vaccine manufacturers shall not be liable. I just took out the word not. Vaccine manufacturers shall be liable. Just taking out the word not changes everything. One word changes everything. In law, and it's a very simple. Now that's the easy part. The hard part is getting it, into Congress and getting the media and getting conservative groups, even getting the gelding Republicans behind it. That's the problem. Chelsea, your line's live, so feel free to join in here anytime.
Hey, great. We know that people are dying from the vaccine. My mom's cousin died 20 minutes after. Her daughter died 5 months after with blood clots in her head. Everybody in my Sunday school class are dropping like flies with heart condition. blood clots in their legs, chest pain. I mean, they are dying. They're dying from the vaccine. And now with a booster, yeah. It's making people angry. Like you will not believe, a nurse was sharing with me. She said, I don't know what's happening in the nursing home. After the booster that all the old folks are getting, it is out of control in that nursing home. They're putting them in range and just upset. Like they want to fight and they want to bite them. And it's just, no, it changes the personality of the person. That's what the booster's
doing. Josie, we're seeing that too.
Yeah.
Yes, we're seeing that too.
This is not just you think. This is real. I hear it from the nurses. And the death, let me tell you, there's going to be so much death in America, we're not going to have enough cemeteries to bury all these people. It breaks my heart because all my sisters are vaccinated. They're all going to die if they don't detox now. And I've been given a sheet of paper how to detox to people. And the nurses, some of the young nurses are freaking out because I'm telling them the truth. I'm trying to warn them now. Do something about it right now. Do something.
We need to share that.
Last night we were talking.
Justin, we need to share that sheet, that information. So send it to me if you can.
Last night we were talking to my husband's cousin in Chicago. Four of the vaccinated people are so sick with COVID. I don't know. We're going to help them today, but guide them where to get the medicine and all that, but overnight them. It's sad. But all
you know, this reminds me of buying lotto tickets. You know,
yeah.
The odds are against you, but you just may be lucky. Same thing with this COVID vaccination. We know the odds are against us, but we just may be in the right position, luck out, as to say, and have something physically go wrong.
And you know, Bianchi, I believe that the first round of vaccines that they gave last year, I think those are okay because they didn't spike him then. Because if you remember correctly, the whole radical left was saying, we will not take Donald Trump's vaccine, which I know is not Donald Trump's vaccine, it's a vaccine. And I think those at the beginning were okay until they spike it because now they're begging you to take the vaccine and they're paying you. They're paying $500 some of the nursing home near me. They're giving $100 in downtown Brownsville here. All the homeless are coming, $100 and a 12-pack of beer. That's what they're getting. It is criminal. Criminal.
Exactly. All these games like season passes to football, college football games. All these things like scholarships. I never seen anything like this before. And you know, the one thing that they hated Donald Trump for, because Donald Trump did everything possible to maintain the liberties of United States citizens. And they don't like that, whoever the day may be.
It's a shame. But anyway.
But we don't know. I mean, there's a lot of things we don't know. It's like,
I don't know.
Well,
there are some things we do know.
There's
a lot of things we do know, too.
I mean, I thought you told me that we're going to have, like, a whole new president on January 6th, too, and you knew that, but that's not what happened.
I never said the date. He's coming back. Donald Trump is coming back 100%. Oh, yeah.
Actually, January 6th is when we lost the president.
True. I would be horribly upset about it, but I just don't think it's true. I think it's I think it's hard for me to believe the other things you say.
You're in plan,
like,
the problem is you're in plan B and I'm in plan A. I know what's going to happen. I already have information. So we do know. But the thing is, without Donald Trump, our country is done completely. Done. And I mean done. I lived through communists. I know the American people are clueless what communists is. They hear about it, they read about it, but they do not know, they have not experienced it. It is here. It is here.
I don't think the problem is people don't know it even when they do experience it. Like Canada. You can't leave Canada.
Right.
That's a totalitarian dictatorship move.
Yeah.
You know, Austria and Germany, you can't leave your house. That's a dictatorship move. You know, mandating a vaccine is a dictatorship move. That's tyranny.
Yeah,
that's what it looks like. I don't think people when it's here, people aren't recognizing it. Shelby, go ahead, because I know you only have a couple minutes left.
Yeah, well, that's what I'm saying is, like, the sentiment. Like, all of this is predicated on the fact that people believe what you believe, and there are so few people in comparison
What do you believe? What I believe? I mean, tyranny is tyranny. How is it not objective to say that if you restrict people to their country, that's not tyranny?
Totally subjective. Because if you don't feel like you're under tyranny, if you feel free, then it's fine. And they do.
I think there are objective criteria that define whether you're under tyranny or not. There are definitions of a republic, of a democracy, of a communist state, of a Nazi fascist state. I think they're very clearly delineated. History has proven them to be true. And this is where you and I do differ a lot, if you feel it, it's real. And I'm saying it's not. I'm saying those are assumptions, and that there's a difference between assumptions and truth. And people are clinging to their assumptions. They'll go to their grave with their assumptions. You know, and this is why you made a really excellent point, Shelby, earlier about people wishing the other side dead. That is horrible. And I would condemn anybody that – I don't care what side of the argument you're on, but if you wish the opposition to be dead, you're just as tyrannical as the very thing you think you're fighting. There's no
– You know, another thing –
We don't do that here. Go ahead, Bianchi.
When you look at the things that the United States – you read stories in the Bible, it's always building a wall to keep people out. Israel's built walls to keep dangers out. Mm-hmm. But now you got Canada basically building an invisible wall to keep people in.
That
kind of reminds me of the Iron Curtain.
That's the difference between tyranny and freedom. There's the perfect definition
between
tyranny and freedom.
East Germany wall done that too, remember?
I crossed it. I went across the Berlin Wall. I know exactly what it was all about. I went through Checkpoint Charlie. So you're not telling me anything I haven't experienced firsthand. Not as much as Josie has in Nicaragua. But in fact, if you want to define freedom, freedom is a place where, you know, they keep the illegal folks from coming into the country. The wall is to keep people out, you know, that haven't been accepted or invited in. Tyranny is a place where they wall to keep people in. I mean, that's a purely objective, you know, rational, verifiable, measurable difference. So your tyranny keeps people in, your republic keeps people out who have not been invited, who have not shown that they meet the criteria to come in. I'm not talking about tourists. I'm talking about immigrants.
It kind of reminds me of the embattled wife whose husband won't let her leave when she say, "I want a divorce." My, oh my.
Right.
I don't know if I can quite buy that analogy, but yeah. Shelby?
The whole thing is wild to me that you can, that you could even see this Canada in a positive light. Like they really are so happy about it. But they do. They are happy about it. There are very few people in Canada that don't like what's going on. They think that they are doing the right thing and they're happy about it. So
now how do they not objectively look at the evidence?
I would like
Shelby? So how do they not look at the evidence that the more restrictive these countries get, the worse the COVID problem gets? COVID breeds in a restrictive environment. You look at any state in this country, California, New York, any place where they have the more restrictions, they have more COVID. The free states, Texas, North Dakota, Florida.
They're not disseminating the information that way.
So that's the problem.
That's not the information being given out. And it's very difficult with all the stats and the way different information is given to us.
We'll just look at the map.
Look
at the COVID map of where the deaths are and where the where COVID is. This is not hard to find. So I agree with you, but I don't understand the people that are ruled by their emotions so strongly that they're clinging to tyranny at all costs. What's that?
They're just listening to the info. You know, for instance, this is interesting too. One of my very, very good friends, China, for all places, I don't remember the last time I looked, I think only like 2,000 people died in all of China from COVID, apparently.
Well,
and
this
said,
is communist
that
dictatorship.
Even
I can't believe that. Yeah.
Right. But again, so this is the way you see it. You see it like, well, that's a lie, obviously, because they have a billion.
Well, maybe
people.
Not. Maybe they have prevention. Maybe they actually do early treatments in China, in which case it wouldn't be a problem. Because it would be in the communist dictatorship's interest to not spend money on people. You know, if they can cure it for $20, why would you? In fact, this is actually a really good point, Shelby. I think you brought up something excellent. In China, in a communist dictatorship, you want to spend the least amount of money possible so you can buy, nuclear weapons and things like that. So if you can treat your people with $20 of hydroxychloroquine and cure COVID, that's in your interest. So then you can get people back into the factories, back making your bombs and all the other things they're making. Okay. In a situation that we have here in a market economy, if you can control the market with a government pharma industrial complex and get people to buy $3,200 remdesivir treatments and give $100,000 if somebody dies in a hospital and they can list it as COVID after ventilation and remdesivir. If you can get $500 for getting a vaccine that's not a vaccine. It's a GMO shot. You know, in a rigged capitalist market, it's not even a capitalist market, in a rigged, you know, market economy, it makes sense to make things as expensive as possible. And if people die, it doesn't matter because you're going to be replaced with others. We got 2 million illegal aliens coming in that are not getting, you know, COVID shots. Why? Because they want them around to change the voting rolls. Why do you think that is? You know, why are Americans getting something that is dangerous? They're not requiring of illegal aliens that have no right to be here. So you look at the motivations of a capitalist society versus a communist society. Yeah, go ahead, Josie. See what I'm getting at.
But in China, mm-hmm. since my niece has a worker there for her, he reports what's going on to her. Mm-hmm. People are only allowed right now to work 3 to 4 days. They're trying to skip the day so they don't get contaminated. But the COVID is under control in China because they're probably giving them hydroxychloroquine or ivermectin.
Well, look at Africa. We know it's in control in Africa, you know, even though the travel ban was there. I mean, the African countries, you know, don't have high COVID rates. Why? Because they're all taking ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine for malaria. And the side effect is they don't get COVID. But here's the weird thing, though. COVID is not that dangerous unless you have comorbidities or you're old. Or you're obese. I mean, this is the simple fact is that there are more young people dying now because of the COVID shot, whereas they're perfectly safe from COVID. This is the other irony that I can't understand. And the evidence is there. I'm not making this stuff up. The CDC will tell you the age ranges where it's more dangerous. In fact, I've got the old CDC charts saying that COVID was basically heading for zero in July of 2020. I still got the chart.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, in Africa, they came around and made people take shots in some countries like Ghana. The first shot, that was back about 7 months ago. They haven't been back to give them the second shot.
Oh,
but see what's happening. You got the U.S. government and other world affairs that's paying these countries, these poor countries, to implement these type of demands on their population. It threats what they are. If you don't take
Pfizer,
you're going to lose your job.
All one has to do is look at
what countries have the highest rate of COVID deaths. United States, when you think we have one of the best health cares in the world, why do we have such a high number of COVID deaths? So then you have to look at how it's treated.
Or you could look at the fact that they're all obese.
No, that's not
that. No,
not,
I know a lot of people that died of COVID that were not obese.
I'm just saying that obesity is one of the main factors in diabetes, and we have like 60% obesity in our country, so... That's also a thing.
She got a point there, Greg.
Well, no,
because
when
I go on tours,
that's why
I'm going on tours.
I've been on tours over,
like, for instance, Egypt. Uh-huh. And the Americans, they can't fit in the tour bus seats because they're all fat.
Yeah. No, in fact, that's something, Shelby, if you want to do some special programs on that, you know, in fact, I'm big on nutrition on the show too. So we're looking at ways to do that. Me, I'm an intermittent faster. So I stop eating. I've got to run, guys.
Thank you so much
you gotta
for
go.
Your time. And an intermittent fasting I'm a huge fan of, by the way. I'm Shelby.
Yeah.
You're fabulous. Bye-bye for now.
Have a good
day. Shelby.
Bye.
And, you know, Greg, that's what one of the RNs at one of the hospitals by my store was telling me. The people not making it is the big people. The COVID gets in their lungs and they wait a little too late. By the time they get to the hospital, they're dying.
Yeah.
They cannot help
now,
them.
Now, what happens with obesity? Does it compress your lungs? Does it just make your body? Is it the diabetes? What is it about obesity that shuts down?
I guess the breathing part.
Okay.
Yeah, they're breathing more than anything, he was saying. Yeah. They get excited about it. They can hardly breathe. They can hardly walk. And they start panicking, you know.
Yeah, see, I was overweight, but I was still able to go to the gym for an hour and a half. So, I mean, that was kind of a weird situation.
But see, the thing is, when you look at COVID, any COVID patient almost gets really anxious because they can't breathe. That's a major cause of people going into the hospital, I think, is because you're not breathing.
Oh.
Yeah, and I tell you, to be honest, the people I've worked with, most of those that have had COVID, and they've survived, the ones I've worked with, they are not overweight, not at all. But the people I know that have died of COVID, they are not overweight. Well, they weren't.
Mm-hmm. No, they did have COVID or they died of medical malpractice.
Their diabetes and everything would play a factor. But the problem is with diabetes, and it is, you know, our lifestyle, what we eat, what we choose to eat. But unfortunately, too, it's what, like we talked about this the other day, Greg, what's put in our food that we don't even realize, the syrups, the sugars are put in basic foods that you would never think they're in.
Yeah.
So I blame the food companies because why? It's cheap filler. Cheap filler to put corn syrup, modified cornstarch in like sausages and stuff. Why? You don't need sugar in a sausage.
It's funny. I eat so little processed. The most processed food I eat is cheese and yogurt. Everything else is either wild animal killed, like salmon or
yogurt.
You
lived in other countries. Yogurt in the United States, how much more sugar it has than any other country? It's insane. Yep. And people don't get yogurt usually. It's always fruit or the ones with the flavors. And that's really sad. Why do they do that? Cheap.
And people think it's healthy, but it's not.
It isn't. Yes.
At all.
Exactly.
But
let's see the other report, Josie. Yeah.
I was reading Florida hospital system suspends all COVID vaccine mandates for employees.
Woohoo!
Ron DeSantis was saying that. There's an article here I was reading that all Florida hospitals have suspended the mandate vaccine.
When did that
start? I'm so excited about it.
When did that start?
It looks like it came out yesterday.
Okay.
December the 6th, actually. Somebody sent me this.
What about the cruise ship that had 3,000 people that was infected? They wouldn't let it dock in New Orleans and a couple other cities.
When was this? This is a while ago, isn't it?
A while back.
No. Well, I don't know. I found the story, but I think I passed it on to you.
And people were dying. They needed to go to the hospital, and they were not letting them dock in the dock. Can I tell you a little bit? I didn't do my report. It's okay. But I was watching a few videos about Costa Rica. Everyone in the streets in Costa Rica, in the markets, in the stores, in church, everywhere you walk, including the little kids, are all wearing a mask.
Broke
my heart watching that yesterday.
Yeah.
Everywhere you go. And everyone is mandated in Costa Rica to get the vaccine, so my nephew just got the second shot.
Here's the thing I don't understand too. I want to talk to Shelby about this. These GMO, these RNA GMO shots. I don't call them GMO shots because they're genetically modified organisms. That's what they are. It's as bad as the crap that's in your food. All right, they're all designed for the alpha variant. These are the same things that were made under Warp Speed under Trump that were made for last December, a year ago. These are a year old experimental vaccines for a variant that died out a year ago. So by the time the vaccines came out, the variant was already dead. Alpha variant was already gone. So the vaccines actually created the Delta variant. Well, then, of course, now we get enough people immune through natural immunity that the Delta variant started to wane. So then they came out with the Omicron variant. They came out or did something with the vaccine, or the vaccine somehow created the new variant, because they do antibody dependent enhancement. Yeah. So in other words, the GMO shot, which we're calling a vaccine for convenience, actually suppresses your immune system enough so that the virus can mutate and create a variant that is successful. And that's what people are getting COVID, because the virus is going around the limited effects of the vaccine for a dead variant. Well, it's crazy. It'd be like taking a vaccine for a disease that's long since gone. It doesn't do anything except give you the disease because there's some of it in there. Yeah, go ahead, Josie. Then we got Paulette.
And Delta, Omicron, what it's spelled if you grab all the letters and put them together?
Oh, I can't wait. Go ahead.
It spells media control.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
You've actually done this? Yeah, we did.
Okay, I believe you.
We got it on a piece of paper, and people are taking pictures in my stores. Oh my God, let me take a picture of that.
Media control.
Yeah.
Well, COVID is a marketing device.
Delta, Omicron, and it's spelled media control.
Media control.
It's a marketing device. That's what this is all about. Yeah, go ahead.
I was going to say yesterday I watched this video on someone putting water on a one of the test strips to test if you have COVID. And they waited, and they waited, and they waited, and sure as crap, it turned out positive.
Well, what a surprise. Water. Yeah, there's COVID in the water. Oh, my God. Or actually, well, I mean, it'll test positive. Well, see, those things test for 22 different viruses. And since there are viruses in the air, well, see, and you know what? That's actually interesting because what that proves is what we've always said. We've been saying since the beginning, since March of 2020, COVID's an airborne virus. It's in the air. It's in aerosols. Everybody's already been exposed to COVID multiple times over. If you haven't gotten sick from COVID, it means you have natural immunity because everybody's been exposed.
Yeah, but what it also shows is they're no good testing them.
Yeah, that's
true.
They don't
test.
Yeah, they're not.
If you can test positive, it's put just running water on it.
Mm-hmm. Now, that's fascinating. Well, here's the interesting thing, though. Now, is that because COVID's in the air, or is that because the test is flawed, or both? That would be an interesting question.
What do you think? Because
Jean? Yeah, Josie?
I would think the test is flawed.
Okay.
It's
Josie?
In the air. Remember that our government pulled all the Lysol because once you spray in the air the Lysol, it kills COVID. And they took it away from us.
There's a lot more air than there is Lysol.
Nowhere.
Lysol doesn't cover enough air to do that. Let me bring Paul in the conversation. Did you have anything that you want to talk about border stuff? Because the border problems are the same. I will tell you this, Josie. This is really interesting. Our countries in Central America are huge now. We've got Mexico, Guatemala, Honduras, Belize, El Salvador, Costa Rica, Nicaragua. Did I leave anybody out? We've got basically every Central American country except Panama is listening to Action Radio. Is that great? Puerto Rico and Jamaica.
That's awesome.
So we've got the Caribbean
Puerto
cover.
Rico.
Puerto Rico. You got to teach us in Spanish. You know, I think the help of that is Alan. Alan will be on Friday, and we're calling him from Belize. I got a big surprise for you all tomorrow, too. Anthony Williams, my friend who used to live here in Milton, Florida, where I broadcast from, he had a local business here. He moved to New Zealand. He's calling in tomorrow at 6 o'clock in the morning.
Oh, wow.
It's 1 o'clock in the morning, New Zealand time. You know, Thursday.
Oh,
he'll
wow.
be on first thing tomorrow morning. Hey, listen, Action Radio, I've got surprises for you guys all the time. That's what we do here. Yeah.
Good.
Paulette.
Good.
Paulette, what's going on with our nutty
food? Good morning, darling.
Good morning.
Good morning, Chica.
Good
hey,
morning, Chica.
Do you have any reaction to
How
what we said
you?
So far, or do you want to leap right into naughty foods?
No, I mean, I'm excited. I'll tell you the, you know, good stuff that's going on with the Supreme Court. I'm very excited.
Do tell.
And
I
know you guys, I'm totally off the subject now.
That's okay.
Because food and vaccine, but just
no,
really
that's okay.
excited to see
there is no subject. Feel free to bring up the court.
Go ahead, listen
to our show yesterday when we had 3 hours with Gene and me. I don't know how many. Haven't we covered like 30 different subjects at least?
Quite a few. Yeah.
We're all over the place. Yeah, yeah. So, Paulette, feel free.
So, tell us. Yeah.
Yeah. What's going on with the court? What's inspired you?
Oh.
Yeah, you.
Well, I mean, it just looks like. Well, I mean, of course, they're not going to make their decision until like next year in June, but it really seems poised that you know, Roe v. Wade may be overturned. So
okay.
that's very exciting
Good.
Information. And, of course, it's going to push
Good.
It back to the states. So there's still some states that are going to wind up, you know, probably even making it less restrictive. And then, of course, there's some states that are going to ban it altogether. But
mm-hmm.
I think all
Well, that's actually the way
it's
supposed to be because the Constitution, you know, in fact, I had a big argument. Well, not an argument, but I remember we had a posting in one of our groups about, you know, the separation of church and state and the public money going to private schools. And it's like, well, so what? So there is no separation of church and state in the Constitution. There is no, in the same way, there's no authority of the Supreme Court to make decisions beyond the parties to a case. There certainly isn't the power to rule on something with regards to health because there is no health delegation of power in the Constitution of the federal government. So the idea that they can make a
right.
national policy is wrong. The idea that they can make law is wrong. The idea that people have to follow it is wrong. The idea that they can create an abortion policy for the nation is wrong. The idea that they can create rights out of the Constitution because they feel like it, that's wrong. I mean, there's so many things that were wrong with what they did. Congress should have recalled all their butts and fired them for bad behavior, you know, decades ago, you know, in 1973. Half the Supreme Court, well, at least the majority that voted for Roe v. Wade, should have been kicked off the bench for judicial tyranny.
Yeah.
That's what should
sure,
have
and they were actually very conservative. And ironically, a lot of people, you know, always champion Ronald Reagan as being such a, you know, wonderful pro-lifer. But really,
not
it was
my
his
show.
State in California that opened the door for Roe v. Wade because it was actually their case that was initially, you know, challenged. He's the one that opened that door initially in California. And, you know, but he did, he had no idea, just like, you know, I mean, and that's just the way that, you know, Satan is so, you know, creepy, the way they just kind of sneak in. They open like this little tiny legal loophole, little tiny, and then they think it's not going to be that big of a deal. And, you know, really, you know, and I have to be honest with you. I mean, I grew up, you know, watching videos of what exactly an abortion is and how it's just complete and total, you know, murdering of an innocent life. So I always knew that. However, I didn't think that abortion was really that rampant. I really didn't think that we didn't, really that many people had abortions. But when I heard Dr. Lyle, the pro-life doc in Pensacola, Florida, talk for the first time, and he was talking about how it's really the number one cause of death in the United States. I was like, what? You got to be kidding. So, I mean, I thought that was crazy. But, I mean, that's true. And so I started talking about it, and then it turned out, as I started talking about it and really kind of opened up, that I found out that so many of my very close personal friends, like probably the majority of them, you know, have had abortions, but they were really lied to, you know, and told, you know, this is just a blob of tissue. And what's interesting about the initial Roe v. case is that the viability issue – you know, that they said, well, you know, that was the biggest, you know, issue that was written in the court case. However, every doctor in the whole world now all agrees that, okay, the baby is viable. So that is no longer an issue. That is why this is being able to be overturned, because of science and technology, which is now like, you know, showed us, okay.
Well, that's a huge point. In fact, if you want to talk about this for a while, I think we should, because we've talked about this before, but the science, the real science, you know, has exposed the lie that this is just a glump of cells, you know, and this is the left, the pro-abortion crowd relied on that. And I grew up in a pro-abortion family. I had a militant, you know, feminist, you know, mom, and you know, she campaigned for abortion back in 1973. So we have to have this. This is essential. You need this to happen. Women, you know, my body, my choice. And I'm thinking, okay, well, you know, why would you do that to a baby? And they said, well, it's not a baby. It's a group of cells. Oh, okay. You know, in my, you know, preteen youth, you know, and you sort of hear this kind of stuff and you internalize it. And then of course you see, now the Catholic Church is really good about getting information out, and they would actually show you pictures. And then of course, you know, the counter story was, well, that's not real. That's all made up propaganda. It turns out they were right. You know, so the information, just like COVID, the information was there, but especially, you know, as kids are being influenced by parents, you've got liberal, you know, socialist, communist parents across the country saying that you need abortion. Abortion's a good thing. You know, women had this right. I think, well, I'm a guy. What rights do I have? You know, I'm sort of questioning this in my teen years, right? And so you kind of go over this. Then we get to the point today where you realize ultrasounds are showing, you know, developed babies. Yeah. I hate the term fetus. I despise the term fetus. Yeah. It's not a fetus. It's a baby. Okay. And it's not unborn. It's preborn. Okay. And that's another Dr. Lyle thing that he taught me. You know, and so when you think about this, you know, and then of course I get onto being a guy, I'm thinking to myself, well, it's, you know, if a woman can say, you know, my body, my choice, well, where can I say, you know, my body, my choice? You know, where are the rights of fathers? You know, and so we talked about that too. So this is a fascinating thing, but I just want to tell you, just before I get your comments here, we have a bill here that Josie helped with, that some other folks helped with. I asked a lot of women who were associated with Action Radio at the time to, you know, help me out with this bill. But we came up with a bill that separates abortion into two separate events under law. The first event under law is the termination of the pregnancy. And the second part of it under law is the saving the life of the baby. And the second part determines the first part. And so the thing is, we're not so totalitarian that you say you can never terminate a pregnancy. But if you do, of course, that's obviously you're revoking your, you know, the mother's revoking her parental rights, because why would you terminate a pregnancy? You know, if you want a parental rights, you can't do that. You can't terminate, unless there's a health reason, and the women who want to save the baby, this law would apply. Okay. So what we're saying is, if your goal is to do the standard practice, which is an abortion that automatically terminates the life of the baby, and I've never understood that connection. I've never understood why you have to do that. That never made sense to me, that you can save a baby at 22, 23 weeks, whatever the current medical technology is, but you're allowed to kill a baby at 39 weeks. That's insane. That's irrational. That's Holocaust material, okay? And so this never made sense. But I still don't want to have a government that's so restrictive it can't say you can't terminate a pregnancy, a woman can't do that, because there may be circumstances, but – you know, and like I say, there's still adoptions and everything else. So if the intent is to save the life of the baby, fine. then you take care of that. You know, you're covered. You know, as far as I'm concerned, you're doing the right thing. But if you're someone that's intent on using the current state of law and that your intention is to have an abortion to kill the baby, because that's the connection, the automatic connection. Now, if we separate that connection in law, I think that opens up a whole new discussion of how we deal with this issue.
Mm-hmm.
Call it.
Yep.
I know it's a lot to think about now. I just threw this on you, but. Hold on, Pierre.
I was laughing when Josie was talking about the media mm-hmm. and how the media, is obviously, changes, the language and the words. Right. And of course, when you were talking about, fetus and that blob of tissue and mm-hmm. things, it reminded me so much, and I'm laughing so hard about the whole Let's Go Brandon thing. Because I was listening to, I don't know if you've heard Mike Rowe's comments on it, but he's actually brilliant the way that he, kind of just describes that whole situation and how, here is this, driver, NASCAR driver, and, there's a reporter interviewing him, and in the background, of course, everybody's saying, F Biden. And, mm-hmm. But the reporter, she says, oh, that's so nice. They're saying, let's go, Brandon. And what's funny is that chant has become, it has nothing to do with F. Biden. I mean, obviously, a lot of people. But even if you think Biden's a pretty good president, the important issue there was that the media, like this woman here, is taking what is actually being said and twisting it. Mm-hmm. And making it appear to be nicer than it really is. And that is what people are furious about. The thing about
abortion, they made it nice. They made it acceptable. They made it's a clump of cells. We're not hurting a baby. We're not doing horrible things. You're just, losing some cells. Well, hey, if you have an accident, you can lose, blood and injury and break arms and things like that. Well, it's like it's making it unreal. It's taking away the truth of it in order to push your point of view. And I see more relationships to COVID and these GMO shots. Then I see, I think it's a little different. Let's go, Brandon. Thing. I want to get Pianki's comment and then see if there's any more on this issue of the abortion question, which is complicated. I don't want to give it shortchange it. But then, if you want to talk, let's go, Brandon. Then that's perfectly viable too, because I got a defund Brandon program I want to talk about. Pianki, did you have another comment here?
Well, you talk about Black Lives Matter.
Mm-hmm.
At one point, the rate of abortions amongst blacks were 50 per hour.
Wow.
Yeah.
In New York, we have more babies aborted than born.
Mm-hmm.
Over a 30-year period since 1973, mm-hmm. there was over 20 million black babies aborted. So where is the idea of Black Lives Matter?
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, that's you've answered your own question. Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And here's something interesting, too, that the leftists that are so protective of, that Black Lives Matter, that, but it's a plantation mentality. It's a farm animal mentality of keep black people on the plantation, in the public housing substandard, in the public schools that are substandard, do everything possible to oppress and make dependent the very people you're proclaiming to help and want to get out of poverty, which, of course, is not the case at all. So, Black Lives Matter is a Marxist, totalitarian, terrorist organization. Why would they care about black lives? That's the last thing that, black is a vehicle. It's a propaganda tool because they know, as Claire explained to us before, because racism works. If you accuse somebody of racism, mm-hmm. White people are supposed to fall down and go crazy. In fact, this might be a good time to play. I don't think Paulette's heard this. My January white sale. From Black Lives Matter. So you want to talk about as politically incorrect as I get on this show. Let me play this for you guys and take a break for a couple minutes and listen in and see what you're thinking. We'll be right back. Here it is, America, the answer to riots, brutality, and all our racial problems. The return of the January white sale. Are you a guilt-ridden white person? Are you a person of no color? Do you want to finally assuage that guilt for slavery, the Civil War, the KKK, and black people sitting at the back of the bus? Well, here is your long-awaited answer. The Black Lives Matter Department of Reparations has come up with the perfect solution, the return of the January white sale. Now, in years past, this was a big deal. After Christmas, sheets, towels, pillowcases, and other white linens were sold with their biggest discount of the year. In today's new normal world, however, things are going to be very different. Because Black Lives Matter is changing the original white sale and now they are actually going to be auctioning off and selling white people. You, white, guilt-ridden, ashamed of your whiteness, complete cowards, bowing your heads, kneeling, raising your hands like at a revival meeting. You, you with your eyes cast down, you whimpering liberals hoping to buy your way out of a debt of guilt that can never be fully repaid because no leftist of color wants you to. You, you will have the chance to experience what no black person experiences in the United States today. Slavery. Yeah, that's right. Slavery. Isn't this great? You will be on the cutting edge of social justice, and you will save the taxpayers some $14 trillion of reparations national debt. Black Lives Matter has gone to a lot of trouble to erase our history and remake society so guilty white people can finally feel free of their white supremacy. George Soros and Bill Gates have already created the Venture Capital Fund to establish Race Bait Consulting, Incorporated, which will be handling the actual white person sale in January. So, who is available for purchase? Oh, and part of the deal is that white people can't be bought by other white people. That would defeat the whole theme of the event. Anyway, to the question. Your basic rifle on the pickup truck, racist, sexist, Islamophobe, Neanderthal, redneck male, is probably not going to sit around and be put in an auction, even if they will be well cared for by their new owners. What we will have available are liberal, surrendering, grilly man metrosexuals and emotionally distraught and disillusioned feminists, both of whom have already knelt before a designated agent of Black Lives Matter to confess their white privilege. So how do you guilt-ridden white people sign up for the January white sale? It's easy. Contact your local chapter of Black Lives Matter, show up at a rally with a flag saying, take me for the January white sale, or simply sign up at the next mass kneeling confession of white privilege coming to a neighborhood near you. The new January white sale is made possible by a grant from Race Bait Industries, Incorporated, and put on by the new normal, new improved Black Lives Matter. Well, that's how I feel about it. I can't believe the stuff I get away with on this show.
Well, Jackie? Tell us how you really feel.
Yeah, I think I just did. Paula, what do you
think? You know, I don't know if you've ever watched Mu'afa 21, the documentary about kind of the baseline of Planned Parenthood. But it's really fascinating, very eye-opening if you've never seen it. I highly recommend
what
it.
What I know about Planned Parenthood, and I'm sure Bianca and Jean and Josie can back up on this, it was started by Margaret Sanger as part of her Negro project to basically exterminate black people in this country. And that's why there are so many black abortions. You know, in other words, well, it would be interesting to see what this country would be, you know, with 20 million as opposed to about 13 million black people. Would there be the same Democrat control, you know, of the black population to the extent that they have, you know, on the plantations? You know, public housing, public schools, and public welfare. You know, it'd be very interesting with a larger population of black Americans. Would there be even more people breaking out of that, you know, getting to middle class, getting to successful positions and, you know, doing things that everybody wants to do anyway? Pianki, what do you think? 20 million black people.
You got one of the major spokespersons for black person organization, the NAACP, the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People.
Uh-huh.
Supports abortion. They support public schools. I mean, just think about it. The things that are more crippling to an ethnic group of people, a large segment of them, is being supported by these organizations that are supposed to be pro-advancement. It just doesn't make sense.
So why would they do it? Let's see if we can make sense out of something that doesn't make sense. What's in it for them? How is abortion in it for the NAACP?
Well, it's always the contributors. You look at those who's contributing to that organization, then you will be able to do the old cliche of follow the dollars.
Well, I'm wondering if 13 million black people are more easily controlled than 20 million. I wonder if it's just a matter of keeping the black population at a certain level so it can be, you know, more controlled in liberal terms, you know, and I hate to classify people, but do you think that there is a population limitation so that, you know, there isn't a greater critical mass of black Americans who are succeeding and disproving the narrative?
Well, look at Chicago. In 189 days, you've had over 3,002 blacks shot by other blacks. No white police shootings, but about 392 murders.
Right.
That's in 6 months.
Yeah.
Mm. I mean, just think about it. 3,002 3,000 people have been shot in that city. And kids going to school have to wear bulletproof backpacks, and they run down the street zigzag to prevent being hit by bullets. I mean, think about that. And that's a democratic city, a democratic stronghold.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's yet another way that the media and that, you know, that it propagandizes, you know, again, because if you go back and if you really look at, you know, what they're saying, like even the NAACP, the reason why they support abortion and Planned Parenthood, you know, which seems completely shocking and counterproductive. But what they say is, well, you're advancing people by allowing them to have abortions. Because then you don't have that baby tying you down, you know, weighing you down, so you have more opportunity. Well, that's such a lie, because really, those babies don't hold you back. They actually put you forward. And so really, if you wanted real power, you would learn, you know, self-control. If women really wanted more power, they would learn to say no instead of just the opposite. I mean, you know, and if you look at just the sexualized culture, I mean, the WAP of our culture, okay? You know, women are being told that their value lies in how sexy they are and how much sex appeal they have. And their real power is being able to be just this extraordinary vixen in the bed, right? I mean, that's kind of the lie of the culture. But where has that gotten them? I mean, you know, so you're going to be this powerful businesswoman with all this money, and then you're going to be this sexual vixen. How is this working for you? How is this culture working for us? It's not. It's a lie. And mm-hmm. and that is just the kind of thing that's happening. And if we were told just the opposite, you know, being pure, waiting until you get married, if you have those very old school ideas, you know, of waiting, you know, to have sex until you got married. Wow, can you imagine that, being told that? I mean, people, when you talk to people about stuff like that, they look at you like you have 10 heads. You're not going to teach that to people. I'm like, why not? Do we not have self-control? Do we not have
power?
No,
we have abortion. You know, we have abortion.
Course.
You don't have to have
we
self-control.
We have abortion. That's right. We can just murder babies. You know,
well, here's a question
for you,
though.
It's so unbelievably crazy.
It is, and I think you're making a really good point here. What were women thinking and feeling before 1973? You know, your moms and grandmoms, you know, what were they teaching? What were they saying? You know, in a world before abortion was legal, I mean, women were saying no. And guys were, you know, I talked to older guys, you know, of the pre, you know, Roe v. Wade and pre the pill generations. Like, we didn't have a lot of sex. You know, you couldn't, and you wouldn't anyway, because, you know, there was no birth control, so you didn't want the responsibility, you know. And so it was a much less, you know, sexed society. Before both Roe v. Wade and the pill. Well, we got some paper in the background here. Who's shuffling?
Uh-oh.
I can hear you. I can hear you shuffling.
Well, you know,
everything goes on the mic. But before Roe v. Wade and the pill, it was a very different country. There were the morals, but it was actually out of necessity. There's a very practical reason for having those morals. Now, those morals are a good thing in and of themselves because it makes your life easier. The nice thing about morals is that they're really designed to make your life easier. They don't complicate you with things that you shouldn't be doing. However, were really practical reasons not to have sex for young people, you know, back before the pill and before abortion.
Well,
Jackie?
Greg,
well,
let's get Josie then, Jackie. Yeah.
I think sex education starts at home,
instead
of the schools. And back in the old days, parents were talking to their children. Now the schools are training your kids. And I have found out that in sex education, some of the people teaching is Planned Parenthood, like in the basement of some of the schools.
Oh,
you know?
Wow.
Of course they want you to have sex because they need the abortions. In a lot of schools, Planned Parenthood are involved. So that's why the rate of abortion is higher nowadays, and it's only getting worse. But on the other hand, if you notice, when a young woman gets pregnant, the government is supporting the whole thing. They
That's
give
the other
them
problem.
Milk. They
food
give.
Stamps,
they pay for the. Yeah, they get everything paid. And
legal
why
help,
will they do that? I mean,
child
the
support.
The person that makes her pregnant should be responsible for that young girl's baby, not my taxes. So we're totally confused in America. One minute we're telling them, go ahead and kill your baby, have sex, you know, so you can get pregnant and kill it. And then the next day, go ahead and have it, and we'll pay for everything. So it's mentally retarded.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what the...
Go ahead, Pianca, and then I got a quick point. We got Chancey in line. I'll get
you. You know, back in the old and famous what we call the day in Black society, if that girl got pregnant up north, the parents' family would send them back down south because they didn't want to experience the shame. It made the South the dumping ground for all the ill repute that was going on up north. Now, like you said, the reason that stopped sending them down south because now you got these programs that pay for that child everything.
Well, there's no shame anymore.
Yeah.
That's another huge point.
You unearned tax income. If you make $500 a year working, they'll give you over $3,000 of what, every child you have or something like that.
Yeah. I'm going to totally change things here for a little bit because I made a comment this morning. I found an article that women registering for selective service was taken out of the defense authorization bill. And that to me is blatant sexism. If men have to register for the draft, women have to register for the draft too. Now you can still do different duties and things like that, but you still have to register. And so I made this comment that, whether it's abortion or whether it's the draft, you know, it's like women's bodies, women's choices, you know, men's bodies, government's choices. And so we have a real, you know, huge whole area of sexism we're really not talking about in both abortion and the military. You know, why should men have to register for the draft and get denied college funds, get denied loans, have different job things and other, you know, things that you don't get if you don't register for selective service? There are huge penalties for that. But women have no such penalties. How do you wrestle with that one, folks? Who wants to take that on? I've stumped the panel. Chancey, welcome back to the show. And we're totally off topic today, so feel free. We're going to be, this is an interesting day. This happens actually quite a lot. So is it sexist?
No.
Is it discrimination? Is it anti 14th Amendment equal protection to say that women's bodies are women's choices? You know, men have no choices in abortion, which we've talked about the differences yesterday. Obviously, the biological differences, and I can do that again. But when it comes to the draft, again, women, you know, men's bodies, government choices. What's going
yeah.
on?
Well, I think if, I mean, and I'm trying to put myself in the role of a feminist, which I'm not.
Well, don't do that. Put yourself in the role of a Paulette.
Then they would probably, you know, they're kind of anti-military anyway. So I think they would probably not believe in any draft anyway, because they probably think that we don't really need, you know, to have a military, you know, per se. But if we're going to have a military, then maybe they would think that we should have that anyway. So I don't know. I have no idea.
But the person who sponsored
conservative. I don't want to try to make the argument for,
yeah,
you know, what they're thinking with that, you know, or not. But
it's a conservative Republican woman that made the appeal and actually tried to and got that part removed because they don't think women are equal. And for the same way, again, you've got some real sexism here against men, you know, in terms of these two major issues.
Well, you know, it's like a friend of mine used to always say, what's wrong with being sexy?
Okay.
Sexist.
Yeah, you
right?
deny men of their fatherhood.
I'm just kidding. That's what he used to always say.
Yeah, I'm going to be a chick magnet one day, lose a few more pounds, and I'm going to be, you know, scary. It's going to be great. But anyway, that's another story. Pianchi, rampant sexism against men.
Don't worry, you're already scary, so you don't have to work on that.
Thank you. This is why I have Paulette on the show.
Otherwise, well, you got these movements to deny a male of his fatherhood when you don't let them have a choice, a decision on whether or not that child should be, a viable life should be left alone.
Well, this is an interesting point of law that really hasn't been discussed. Now, I don't believe men should force women, you know, to either have kids or not have kids. That's not our choice. But the thing is, when it comes to, you know, father's rights, in the same way a woman should not be able to force a man to take on the role of fatherhood if the woman herself has a choice of abortion. That's unequal. That's sexist. That's an unequal choice. And it violates, you know, men's constitutional rights to say whether they want to be a father or not. You know, so you can't hit up a guy for 18 years of child support if he says, I choose not to be a father, just the same way a woman would choose not to be a mother. Okay, that's not right. So the thing is, or if, you know, again, with my law the bill that I proposed that separates abortion into two events, one, terminating the pregnancy, and two, saving the life of the baby. Obviously, the first choice of parental rights would go to the father if the mother decides to terminate the pregnancy. You know, and that way, so we redress that grievance too. So there are ways to do this, but men aren't taken into account at all in the abortion question whatsoever. In the whole idea of my body, my choice. Well, it's not just your body. If it were just your body, abortion would be an easy issue. It's not just a woman's body. You've got a baby's body, and you've got a father's body and life involved. And that's pro-choice times three. And that's
the argument I made yesterday.
Yeah.
And the two had to come to a consensus to perform the act that made the baby. Why come the consensus could not be between the two, a positive consensus, and letting the baby become a viable human being?
Well, it can, but you need two people that are willing to reach a consensus. And a lot of people do. And these are the people we don't hear about, the people that decide on adoption or decide to raise their kid or decide to, any number of things they decide that involves, the kid being alive. You know, it's the people that the controversy is the idea of ending the life of a baby and denying a father, who wants to be a father, or denying a man who wants to be a father his rights, when you could just as easily maybe have the baby and then, the father would have the parental rights taken from there. So, there's no good here. There's no easy way out of this. This is a messy issue. I'm not going to deny that. But there are a lot of parts of the issue that we haven't even covered yet. Anyway, I don't want to take up Chancey's time with that unless you want to talk about something else. Paulette, first of all, did you have anything else? Did you have, you got a couple of minutes of naughty to nice foods. I mean, we sort of – you started this.
Sure,
this
absolutely.
When you bring up
I know
other
we
topics,
got completely off topic
we just
from
– okay, go ahead.
From that. But yeah. I do have to say, though, so kind of this month, I've really been talking about, naughty and nice foods, and I've been, focusing kind of on different cultures. Last week on my show, I did a German Christmas meal, and tonight I'm actually doing a Latino meal. So I don't know if Josie's going to be around or she's still in the conversation, but – I'm definitely going to be talking about some of the, so I'm going to be talking about some of the naughty foods of Latino, which would, of course, for me be beans and grains being the rice, and I'm talking a little bit about, lecithins, which is kind of what I was going to talk, lectins, I was going to talk to you guys a little bit about that and legumes.
Save it for next week.
Because
I want to find out about lectins and leaky gut syndrome and some of the other nasty things that are going on. The last time I had a bean salad, I got sick. And they were having a bean salad again because it was full of lectins, I found out.
Well, beans were actually – there was actually a time when beans were banned in Britain.
Oh, that's interesting.
Because they were considered so dangerous.
Britain bean
of course,
ban?
You know,
try saying that
but
fast.
Yeah, but when you soak the beans and when you cook the beans, that's supposed to take away a lot of the phytic acid. But again, in the active state, they cause a lot of digestive problems for a lot of people.
People forget that
they
plants,
can be an anti-nutrient.
Plants defend themselves just like animals do. Plants have poisons in them to defend themselves. That's what lectins are all about. Benign little things sitting out there, but they're not. Not that they can't run away, but there are plants that have defenses, and that'd be a fascinating topic too. Okay, why don't you give yourself a shameless plug for tonight's show? Then I want to get on to Chancey.
Absolutely. So, tonight 7 p.m. Central, www.twitch.com/naughty2nice, and tonight we're going to be doing some Latino Christmas food. And you'll just have to check
Feliz
in and see what's going on. I'm going to be doing some enchiladas with poblanos, a keto version and a vegan version. And we're going to put a little pomegranates and some cranberries in there. So I hope you guys will check it out. And I thank you so much for having me on my show. I'm really excited.
Well, we're glad to be on your show. Sorry. Feliz Navidad. Prospero año y felicidad. Jose Feliciano. It's the only Spanish I know.
I'll let you guys go, too. I'll be listening. God bless.
Okay. Thanks, Josie. Thanks. Paul, you can stick around, too.
Ciao.
Feel free. Okay.
Ciao, Chica.
Okay, I'll be listening, but I'm probably going to have to go out because I got to start getting things prepared. It's kind of a crazy week for me.
Oh, no kidding. It's crazy. It's always a crazy week around here. Chancey, I know you're out there. Thanks, Paul.
Hey. Hello.
Yeah, we can hear you. Yeah, we're kind of all over the place. Okay. In fact, we just lost a bunch of people. So it's just you, Pianchi, Eugene, and me. So as happens here, people come and go, which makes the show really interesting because you never know who's going to be on the line. Did you want to comment on anything you've heard so far, or do you want to leap into wine, weed, and wellness?
Well, it's up to, I can talk about whatever, but that's definitely a problem.
No, it's your report.
I mean,
Yeah, feel free.
The men and women whole thing, I mean, I don't know. It'll always be a thing. It's just like my body, my choice, but then you're forced to take a shot. And the same people that believe in that believe that you should take the shot. And if you don't take the shot, you're an idiot. And so I think people just lump themselves into all that so they can believe what they want to believe when they want to believe it. And then when
it's your body, my choice. When it comes to your body, my choice. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Well, and that's what I was getting on this morning to talk about, because my week has been full of that. And so it's been just slapping me in the face of injury, and they're coming to me and they are in really bad shape, and they're it's kind of like, it was going to be a more serious point, but we can take it, you know, hilarious.
I don't mind serious. You know, we do both. What are they being injured from? Are you talking vaccine injury or what?
Within 4 hours, not being able to walk, not being able to form a sentence.
Oh, jeez.
Reactivating their AIDS from 15 years ago. Having many strokes within a few hours of each other, but it's not the shot.
Let's go over these individually, because I'm really curious. Like I say, obviously we don't want names, but I'm just, you know, because when Shelby was talking earlier about the perception is the vaccines are safe and effective, and anybody who doesn't take them is crazy. We really need to go to cover the effects of this, and like I say, you know, don't be afraid to go into some detail. Strokes is one of the things I'm interested in, because we did a show on Brian Sicknick, the Capitol Hill police officer. They said was killed with a fire extinguisher. He had two strokes. I'm convinced that he died of the shot.
Yeah, same. Yeah. I mean, and, you know, who are we? So we can't do the autopsy. We can't see it. They won't do an autopsy on the parts that they need to do an autopsy on, because then that would prove.
Where do they need to do it? Brain? Okay.
The brain and the heart. Uh-huh. Okay. And that's what's being found out is, like, number one client, 91 years old, took the second shot, had to be taken to his second shot in a wheelchair. So that wasn't in a wheelchair.
For the first shot or what?
Yeah. For the first shot, he was just a regular, you know, 91, so a little bit, you know, aged, that needed help in, you know, doing things in life, but it was still cognizant, was still, you know, up and at him and would do things and could call you and have a full conversation. He's in a home, you know, in a assisted living. He's very wealthy, so he's taken care of very nicely, you know, as much as you possibly can be. And they took him to his second shot in a wheelchair because he just wasn't feeling good that day and they didn't want him to fall. And so after the second shot, he goes home and starts realizing himself still at 91 about himself that he could not form a sentence. So, like, his words weren't coming out correctly. He was looking at you with, like, a dazed – this is, you know, I work on family members. So, like, the daughter and him, you know, are telling me this story. So, you know, looked glazed over, just didn't know where he was. And then they finally got him into the doctor. They did some blood tests, and they said that they found a stroke. I found a stroke that he had had in 1990 that he knew about, and that there was evidence that per looking at him and listening to him, it was like he had had a stroke, but they couldn't find the evidence of a new one. And that his blood levels showed that he had a blood clot, but they also couldn't find the blood clot. And so it's because it's in either, you know, they will need to literally cut your heart open to find it or cut your brain open to find it. So, I'm not a doctor, and so I don't know, you know, what that would entail.
No, but that makes a vaccine, you know, what do they say, contraindicated, I guess is the term, rather than saying don't get it. You know, I mean, those two things alone, evidence of stroke and heart problems would be, you know, prima facie, or the legal term, you know, primary evidence that you do not get the GMO shot if you have those two things. That's just crazy. Plus his age.
And they want you to get the booster. So what, you know.
That's Jean. Jean's got a comment. Go ahead, Jean.
Oh, sorry.
I wanted her to finish first. But what I was going to say was there's more negative side effects from the COVID vaccine than a lot of vaccines or other medications that have been taken off the market.
Right. Yeah.
Jesse, go ahead.
They keep pushing this, which is insane.
No, it's marketing. It's money.
Yeah.
And so, you know, you look at his age and it's like, well, he's old, you know, so, you know, that's just part of it. He's declining in age. And the thing was, is that he was telling his doctor. So it's not like a third party was telling his doctor. He was back to him halfway normal self in order to tell his doctor that he experienced this. So that's number one. And I mean, they're just doing what they can. You know, the family is assessing and trying to keep him alive and just hoping that nothing happens again, because who knows what the next step is.
So, what do you recommend for treatment? What do you recommend for people with vaccine injury?
That's why I'm so excited, because I'm helping. I mean, it is God straight through me. But magnesium, vitamin D,
okay. Mm-hmm.
Vitamin C.
How much?
Of course.
How much of magnesium?
I don't want, but I will give you some numbers. It's all.
Well,
like,
give me a range. I mean, because like you say, with vitamin C, I've heard anywhere from 1,000 to 5,000 grams.
Yes.
You know, and I'm thinking that's a big range. Okay, so you know, zinc, I've heard 10 to 50 milligrams. You know, so I'm just wondering. In fact, like Dr. Zelenka, when he does his protocols, he has a range for prevention and a range for cure. But he's a doctor, so that's he's prescribing. Those are actually his protocols. So we don't have to give a range. I'm just curious to know about how much, because I have these relative numbers in my head. You don't have to give exact numbers, but, just kind of what are we talking about with some of these things, if you can tell me.
Yeah, you're looking at starting out at 1,000 milligrams of C.
Okay.
And it's all about your bathroom. So if you start having, digestive issues and going to the bathroom like runny, you need to back off. But if you can handle the 1,000.
Okay.
Yes, it's too much vitamin C. So if you can handle the 1,000, you just go up. You know, my thing would be to, depending on what kind of the powder I send, it's a powder, so you can go up like by the eighth of a teaspoon, but if it's a vitamin or if it's a supplement, you would just go up in dosage, like take one more, and see until you kind of get a little stomachy issue. And again, I am not prescribing or telling anyone what to, but that is where we're at. Yeah.
You
and
can make disclaimers. That's okay.
Okay. The vitamin D. D is like the number, like I would say that was number one. CBD is number one, so that's where the cannabis comes in, and it doesn't have to be marijuana. So that whole thing. And then vitamin D is number two, and then vitamin C. And then you just go off of what they're experiencing. So if it was heart and brain, you start attacking the heart, not attacking, but attacking the heart and brain with wellness. So magnetic therapy, light therapy, oxygen therapy, you get the cells turned back on. And telling the body that we're okay for what we're made to do, which is heal.
Okay.
And then you can add all kinds of other things in there. I could give you a list, but my biggest, what I'm seeing with the people that I'm working on is a probiotic with adaptogen, which is, it's all kinds of conglomeration of things that I could, it's herbs and like for your mind and your mental clarity. Cause that's what the others like. So I have another guy that's like 52, I think he's 52 or 53, same concept. He's a construction worker and he was not after his, he didn't even get the shot. He got COVID. So I'm dealing with people that have, COVID long haul, if you want to call it that. And then also the shot. So this gentleman didn't even get the shot. He got COVID and it was having to brain fog, just that, not knowing what, going in the kitchen, forgetting something, but more than usual. And so he's been on 2 weeks of the regimen, and he called me yesterday. It was, I'm in tears, but he called me and was like, you've changed my life, but I haven't. It's just the body is doing what it was meant to do, and it's getting the nutrients that it's meant to get.
Did he get early treatment for COVID? Did he get the cures that we know?
He did not. Well, it was one of those, his story is amazing, and he may or may not. He's one of those people that if we could get him on here, it would be great.
Yeah, you're welcome to say. You're welcome to ask, yeah.
Yeah, I'll talk to him for sure. But he went to the hospital. He went to the ER because he couldn't breathe, and they checked his O2 stat, and they said it was okay. And then they asked him if he'd had the vaccine, and he said, no, I've done my research, and I'm not getting it. And then they asked him if he could get the vaccine, do you want it? And he said, no, I need help. They wouldn't even give him water. And then they told him to go home. Yes. They told him to go home, check his oxygen levels, and if it got below 99 or 98, for him to come back. And so he spent 2 weeks at home, like literally feeling like he was going to die. And that's probably a common case going on around here because they're just, I don't know. I hate to, again, we're talking about men and women, but a man is stubborn and it's like, I'm fine, I'm going to get better and I'll get there, no worries, it's just the flu. And then they're dying of a heart attack or a stroke because the oxygen to their brain and the oxygen to their heart is not there. So then we list it as a heart attack and not COVID. Now it's backwards. We used to list every death as COVID, but now if the vaccine kills you, we don't say it's the vaccine. We say you just died of a heart attack. So it's like a, it's a, it's a mind game. They're talking.
It's such a nice little marketing thing.
Yes.
That's scary.
And
yeah.
So he, that was that one. And then the third one, and I'll shut up, but it was a gentleman who has had AIDS for 15 years, like per diagnosis, and was driving for Uber 8 to 10 hours a day. So he was in remission, you know, taking all of his anti, immune, he's taking all these immune suppressants and keeping
AZT
it at bay.
AZT or better stuff?
What now?
Was he taking AZT, the Fauci alleged cure that really didn't do a whole lot? Betcha not.
No, and it's so, yeah, and it's so wild because, like, you know, pro-Trump, pro-this, pro-that, military man, did his service, and then was brainwashed. Like, you know, all the news and all this and all that, take the shot, take the shot, take the shot. You're helping humanity. You're working in the public. You've got to take the shot. And so, again, after the first one, decent, had aches and pains, gets the second one, can't form a sentence. They can't find the blood clot, but they think it, they know it's there. They can't find the evidence of a stroke, but they know it's there. So it's like this. It's awful. Yeah. But anyways, go ahead.
Let me ask you a question. Then we're going to take a break. I'm going to play our spot for Eric Colley, our wonderful webmaster who created our new website. Do you think it's possible, Chancey, that it's not one stroke, but a whole bunch of little strokes, yeah, multiple protein spike protein clumps are forming multiple blood clots that are infesting the brain. So they're looking for one blood clot, but there really isn't one blood clot. There might be 100 or 1,000 or 10,000 or a million little blood clots. These vaccines that are not vaccines shoot some trillion cells, messenger RNA cells, into your body. Well, if you got a trillion cells, it would make sense that a percentage of those, maybe even a million, which is a tiny fraction of a trillion, you know, a blood clots might actually be forming in people's brains. You could have a million blood clots up there.
Like,
what do you think?
I can't list names and all the things, but...
No, go ahead and finish,
sorry,
and then I'll get to Jean. Yeah, go ahead, Chancey. Finish your point.
The thing about the blood clots is it's literally thickening your blood and smearing it. So, yes, that's what's happening. Like, it's little bitty, you know, it doesn't necessarily, it may not even register as a clot on an MRI or a CAT scan or whatever, you know, but it's there. It's thickening of the blood, and it's keeping the blood flow from your organs, which is kidney failure and liver failure and all the things that are happening, but they are happening long term. So it's not, they'll go, well, that was 3 months after he had the shot. Well, yeah, it took that long. Thank God he was halfway healthy when he got the shot, you know, so.
Yeah.
It's turning on, and you heard Dr. Judy say that, it is turning on our cancer gene. So other than that, you know, it's turning on everything else. Like, if you've got anything wrong with you.
Suppressing our immune system. As I understand it, the shot suppresses your immune system to allow your body to accept the messenger RNA to create the spike protein so your body can learn to fight them, whereas if you just left your immune system alone, it would fight the spike proteins at all levels automatically. Jean had a point, and then I want to take a quick break. Jean?
Yeah, sorry. I just wanted to say that, you know, if it was many strokes and stuff like that, or not even if it's numerous strokes, it should be picked up on some type of testing. So it's interesting, though, that if there's many blood clots like that, some of those aren't detectable. But, I mean, and sometimes, you know, people, you can't see it on testing right away for whatever reason. But you would think that if they'd be having some type of neurological issue, that they would be able to show it on the test.
Well, how do you account for your entire blood flow slowing down? If your blood is gradually thickening with millions and millions of or even trillions maybe of tiny spike protein, it's like a river with too much mud in it. You know, you can't see one, there's no one rock holding everything up, but, you know, it's the entire river is being slowed down like mud. You know, maybe your blood's becoming mud in these people, or the equivalent, it's a thicker, you know, and instead of flowing like water, it's flowing like corn syrup, you know. I mean, that might be happening. And then you wouldn't find one blood clot.
Right.
Which
might
be more dangerous than I thought it was.
Right. But I'm just saying, if it would have been like mini strokes or something like that, I'm not talking blood clots, but I rang in when you were saying that before. And who knows? It's like maybe they're just not doing certain tests.
That's what they're doing. That's where I'm at. That's what I wanted to say. I know we've got to go to the break, but, like, that's the issue, is that they do that one test to see if you had a TIA or a stroke, and it's like, oh, you're on the range, we don't know. And so they don't want to dig in, because then that adds, we may find something. And it may not be a stroke. Man, you know, you know, it may be just something that this new vaccine was created to do. It's a neurological rewiring, or it doesn't necessarily have to be that, like, per medical terminology, it's a stroke, but it displays that. You know what I mean? So that's why they're not digging in, and they don't.
Yeah.
Because they don't.
Well, if you want to dig in and find out what the message is in the messenger RNA, what message it's actually sending to your body, I mean, spell it out for us. You want to do that next week? I'd love to have that on the show. In a little bit here, I want to talk about our wonderful webmaster and be right back. This is Greg Penglis for Action Radio with a personal recommendation and testimonial for Eric Colley, our new webmaster and marketing guru. Eric has been invaluable in upgrading our website, writeyourlaws.com. To help you with your marketing, Eric Colley offers proven, cost-effective strategies to help small businesses, startups, and nonprofits market themselves on Google Page One. You can gain thousands of followers and be far more competitive, and this is the good part, without paid advertising. Most business owners don't have the time or expertise to excel at marketing. Even fewer have the funds to hire a special employee. And you don't have to. There is a better option. Eric Colley, a consultant who uses leading-edge marketing strategies to increase your profitability at costs which are far more affordable than an advertising or marketing agency. You can be seen high up in Google's Page One. You can dominate Google's local three-pack of businesses next to the search results map. You can increase foot and website traffic. Eric Colley can be reached at 208-999-7510. That's 208-999-7510. His website is besmallbusiness.com, besmallbusiness. And you can reach him by email at eric@besmallbusiness.com. And that's how you do it. Yeah, and we have a fabulous new website because of Eric at www.writeyourlaws.com. That's WRITEYOURLAWS. Whew, I love our new website. Chansey, have you had a chance to see it?
Yes, I went around on it. It's nice. It tells people exactly what to do. Very simple and clean and very sharp.
Good. That's what I wanted to know. Because I, you know, it's easy for me to navigate around because I know what's there. In fact, I helped design it. I wrote most of the, I think I wrote all of it, actually, as far as what you see on the screen. But, you know, to actually create the website, that's the part I have no idea how to do. So if it's easily understandable, that's exactly what I need to know. Okay, we've got about 8 minutes left for anything that you want to talk about, Chansey. And it's just Gene's here, me, and you, and everybody else is gone. So feel free.
Yeah, that's what I want to talk about is I wanted to bring in, you know, the serious moment of, like, the reason I call wine, weed, and wellness is that it brings attention to weed. And weed is cannabis, marijuana. All of that plays a role in health and wellness. And it's just the name has been stigmatized. Oh, I smoke weed, or you smoke weed, or you're a weed head. Like, the cannabis plant has so many benefits, you don't even have to talk about THC. So if in the instance of COVID recovery, pre-COVID, shot repair, you need something that activates your endocannabinoid system, which is everywhere in the body. And that is what CBD does. And so my number one, like what I'm putting all these people on, and that's the first thing I'm giving them is CBD. Are you okay with taking CBD? They're like, I'll do whatever you tell me. So, you know, they're doing it and it's helping with inflammation. They're waking up not sore. Their head doesn't hurt. They can, you know, they can function. So my plea to you is to research and educate and ask me or whatever and just put it on your body. Like, it doesn't even have to go in your mouth. Your skin is your largest organ. It will do what it's supposed to do with it. It does not do the work. It signals the body to do the work. So it tells the body, hey, I can make it. And then you start doing that and you keep doing that. And there is in lives like amazing possibilities. So,
well, how does CBD work? What are the exact initials? I keep getting it wrong. CBP or what is it?
What'd you say? What was the last thing you said?
What are the exact initials? I always get it wrong. CPB or CBP?
Oh, there's CBD.
CBD.
But CBD is more than, so there's CBG, there's CBN, there's THC, there's CBD1, there's CBD2. So
M-O-U-S-E. Sorry.
Yeah, exactly. And so they've lumped it into this, they've lumped it into this one thing, you know, and
well, how does it help you, though?
Go
ahead.
Goes in and turns off your inflammation. So inflammation causes digestion issues. Inflammation causes sleep issues. Inflammation causes, mental issues, anxiety, depression. So inflammation, if you want to study, you know, that's where the goal is. That's where the key is. And that's what these shots are doing. And that's what any disease is. It's inflammation in the body that your immune system has to pay attention to rather than your normal functioning. So, and just a little tidbit, the gentleman that I helped yesterday, he had knee surgery in ninth grade, and it hasn't bothered him in ever. He's a, you know, a welder. He's active. After the second shot, he said, I stood up off the couch, and it felt like the doctor had just cut my knee open because it went back to old injuries, old disabilities, old, like, inflammation, and found that scar tissue, and it's attacking it. And that's what – and that's where it was injected in to do. So it's just little things like that. And then so – yeah, I know. And that's where the CBD, like topically, it goes into the cells and it starts making them listen and shrink down and just calm down and let the body just move and flow. And they're like, it's in everything. It's in our brain. It's in our eyes. It's in our brainstem. It's in our spinal column. The endocannabinoid system. Dogs have it. Cats have it. We're all born with a system that reacts to CBD. So why not put it in?
So how would we get it? So does your body make it naturally, and is there a deficiency, or is it a nutritional thing that we should be doing? And why, if we have an endocannabinoid system, wouldn't our body make it naturally, or does it need food, or does it actually need the cannabis to be able to make this? And I want to talk more about this. This is several shows right here, just on the effects and how this all works. But how does your body do it without CBD?
It does, like it creates its own
okay.
to where you're okay, but then it's just like zinc, copper, magnesium. We make all that too. But then
right. Why
are we supplementing? And it's because the world has pulled it out of our foods. They've pulled it out of our plants. We're basically even eating real food. So unfortunately, as the time goes on, we have to adapt. And there's more to that. It's a whole, I mean, Lord, it's scientific as crap, but you don't have
we'll
to go that
there.
Route. But you, yeah. And so my passion is to help people understand that they do not have to use the psychoactive part of cannabis. They can use just CBD. The THC does help activate the CBD. Even on a non-psychoactive, frankincense is the same makeup as THC if you use the resin. So there's like this whole, like, why did they found THC resin in goblets back in the times? Well, it might have been frankincense, and it might have been the resin, and it might have been the frankincense and myrrh that we are used to talking about. So there's so much to it that you cannot deny that it's been around. It hasn't caused any death. And why are we not using it when Tylenol kills people every day?
Reefer madness. It's reefer madness. It's no. I'll say what I think it is. It's the tobacco companies. They didn't want the competition. They didn't want people smoking. In fact, the tobacco companies, if I remember, have patented about 50 names for marijuana cigarettes if they ever became popular or legal. They've already got the market on that. But now they can sell cigarettes in China, so they don't need to sell marijuana here. And so now it becomes a drug dealer thing. But if it were legalized, you wouldn't have the drug dealers. It's like the mafia used to run something called the numbers game, where you pick numbers, and if you pick the right numbers, then you'd win money, right? Well, New York and Massachusetts tried to close those down forever, and they couldn't. So the numbers games were still going on. So what did the state governments do? Well, they created the lottery, which is basically the numbers game. So they've taken the mafia's numbers game and made it legal. So same thing here.
Yeah.
You know, it's like they make it, but they want, some company wants to monopolize it. So if government's not making money off it, they're probably making money off the taxes. But just, we've got about a minute left. I'm just curious, are there foods that naturally have CBP in them?
Well, there's foods that activate the same receptors. So like black pepper, fennel, Yeah, there's more. Yes, I could get a list, but I usually just tell people to go with the black pepper, frankincense, and then that's a way that you, if you don't want to do, but it's not the same. It's not going to be, you know, 100%, but it actually, it helps your endocannabinoid system turn on and get alive. And then they need to rename it. They need to rename the CBD. And then because, and but that's what they do. That's what marketers do. They name it something and then they let you see both sides, bad and good. And then you get to try to decide. But if they came out with an anti-inflammatory oil, people would put it under their tongue and not think twice about it. But they have to call it CBD. Yeah. So that's where we're at.
Because it's marijuana based. Yeah. And it's a controlled substance. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I want to learn more about this because we've only got 10 seconds left, but inflammation is like the root of most of our health problems, isn't it? Almost all of them? Okay.
Yeah.
All right. You got 5 seconds. Give us a shameless plug and let's pick it up next week.
I am Chancey Terry and I will be at Everman's on December the 15th at 9 a.m. on 9 Mile, teaching more about, I do classes like this. So if you want to see me in person, Everman's on 9 Mile. December the 15th at 9 a.m. It's a Wednesday. And I also have a website, Chancey Terry, Chancetterry.
Okay. And you have to tell me the origin of your name at some point, but we're out of time. You're the only person I've ever heard named Chancey, so this is kind of cool. All right. We'll be out here. We're going out here now. We're going to be back tomorrow morning. Thank you, Chancey, too. Thanks, Gene, and everybody else that called in, Gene, our producer, and everybody else that called in this morning. Greg Penglis for Action Radio on a very busy Tuesday morning. Our website here at blogtalkradio.com/citizenaction. Our brand new bill writing site. Well, it's not brand new. It's just new and improved, but it looks great. WriteYourLaws.com. WriteYourLaws. WriteYourLaws.com. Back tomorrow morning at 6 o'clock with my friend Anthony Williams calling in from New Zealand.